Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
To Fuller, yes, what do you say to the black people who live out in places like Clinton, Fort Washington, Kettering, and Largo, who side with the whites and say that the blacks who live on the reservation or in the ghettos are nothing but crazy, trashy niggas, and that they put themselves and they perpetuate the situation themselves, and they side with the whites? What do you say to
black people?
What do you say to those black people who live, who say, well, blacks can make it, we've made it, and it's their problem. The people live in the ghettos, it's their problem, it's not white supremacy. What do you say to black people?
Well, you certainly don't.
What do you say to black people who think there's no problem at all, that there's no problem?
What do you say to black people to say there's no problem?
Yes, sir.
You say, well, you're entitled to your opinion. Mm-hmm. And that's all you say. And then you turn to the white people and say, now, don't use anybody as an example of a person with a problem except the person that has the problem. And I'm one. So keep talking to me. And if you don't want to talk to me, then that means that you are opposed to me, and we're just going to act like we opposed each other. That's all. Doesn't make any difference what the other white black people do. See, we have a tendency to always want to turn around and see what the other black people are doing. Get away from that. In job situations, don't say, well, these black people just don't stick together. We could do this and you could. No. You step out on your own. The compensatory code, that's why I call it United Independent. It means that when you start down to the head office, and these 40 people that said they were going with you, when you start down there, before you start, that night before you make this big move, see, that's going to put your job in jeopardy, here's this long corridor right to that forbidden office where the decision is going to be made probably to put you outside, okay? All these black people for weeks have been telling you, yeah, man, I'm with you, you know, I'm with you. Heck, we got to stand up. I mean, you know, we're together on this one. As you walk down that hall, don't even look around. See, as they dart in the side doors and corridors, the closer you get. So when you get there, you're alone. But you already figured you would be. And you just open the door boldly and go in there because you got your package together. That's what United Independent means. Don't ever wait around for the crowd.
Yeah, but if you're going to go into a situation like that, the only thing that you're going to be successful with is probably, what they call them, the AK-47. You know, because, of course, the white supremacist is going to do what he wants to do to you once you step out. So, I mean, what do you
Okay, doing? I just mentioned something about a job situation. One thing that you want to remember about a job situation is what? Always put yourself at the center of the company. In other words, what's good for you is good for the company. That is your philosophy. In other words, you're saying anybody who's working against you is working against the company. See, always do that. Never say you are working against the company, the agency, that the agency is messing over you, the company is messing over you. See, I'm talking about words. That's what you're moving around. Always say, Mr. Griffin, we have some subversive activity going on around here. There are people who are undermining us in this illustrious work that we are trying to achieve. You say, well, Willie, subversive activity, you know, That's pretty strong language. Well, that's what I have to call it, sir. That's what it is. There are some people who are trying to... Well, who are these people? That's why I came to you, sir. I would like for you to find out, because I know you're a smart person, and I know that you have the staff that can do it. And so I thought that I would alert you. So you're gradually making yourself the center of the company. You know, they are working against the goal of this company. Now, it's not a trick, because everybody says that the goal of the company is to do justice. You ain't going to get nobody to say anything other than that. So you say you definitely believe in justice. So you know a whole lot about injustice. You got a long track record, so you can spot it. That's what you tell them. And that's not a trick that you are playing. You are undoing the tricks. All right? So this is the approach. This is the counter-racist approach. This is the best you can do, short of, you might say, doing something that's real harsh. But I'm saying some people who have tried it, it works. Believe me. But see, where black people make their mistake is that the company is against me. Company is always mistreating black people. This company is always... No, don't say that. You're using incorrect words. I know what you mean, but don't use those terms. See, who is the company? You are the company. So anybody who's working against you and you are trying to do the correct thing, and you're supposed to be, is working against the company. That's the mathematics of it. So you call it to the attention of people who are supposed to be able to take care of it. And if they don't, well, then they become the suspects. Say, well, Mr. Griffith, I was in here 3 weeks ago, and this thing is still going on. I'm quite sure you've been busy and whatnot, and you just haven't gotten around to it. You know, because I know you would have stopped it. I did put the word out that you were going to. But apparently, some of these people are very, very arrogant. And, you know, so he's going to kind of brush you off and all like that. But persistence, that's another word you want to be familiar with. I have seen that word persistence come up over and over and over again, all down through everything I've ever read and heard about. You be persistent. There's a saying that if you don't have any sense, any money, and no friends, the one thing that history has proven is that if you are persistent, just keep on keeping on. The ant and the rubber tree plant, you know, the ram and the billion kilowatt dam. It'll finally crumble if you're persistent. But now, holidays, like I say, should be spent doing something constructive. Just like everything that you do should be something constructive. I don't care what it is, and it's not stifling. I was talking to somebody just a little while ago before we started talking about the concept of work. Okay? Black people work anguishlessly, you know, with anguish, in order to have fun later on. The difference between the victims of racism and the white supremacists, for the most part, in the Northwestern Hemisphere, is that the white supremacists build their fun into their work. This is why they will be sitting there burning midnight oil. And you'll say, you know, Mr. Spencer, he's in there and he works all the time. See, but his work and his fun are the same. Why? Because if he's a white supremacist, he's getting his adrenaline just from knowing that what he's doing is going to put you further in your place tomorrow. And he gets a charge from that. See, we don't have anything to get a charge out of except trying to impress each other, which is a lot of dead weight to carry. Black people work all of their existence trying to accumulate things to do what? Impress other black people. You notice how black people don't do anything to impress white people? Because white people are not impressed. I don't care what you do. I don't care what kind of car you got, how big your house, they are not impressed. Because first thing they say is, yeah, he's got a mansion, but my brother built it. Right. And overcharged him for it. You know, right. You know, I mean, that ain't nothing to do. We white people do everything. So he's not doing nothing calling me over there to see his house. You know, we build houses, millions of them. He's got one that he's worked for all of his days, 9 jobs, and he thinks I'm going to be impressed. So we instinctively know this. So we don't even attempt to impress white people with nothing that we do. All right? But we will work 3 and 4 jobs trying to pay off that $95,000 car that we bought. And then I'm going back down to South Carolina. So that everybody can see that I made it. And so they stand around and look at it for 15 minutes. And when you walk off, probably break the antenna on it. See? And so what are you really working for? Stop and think about this. I mean, really, your whole value system is all messed up. You try to impress other black people who, even when they are impressed, what have you done? Nothing. A big fat zero. So I impress you with what I got. I got my new pair of shoes. And you look at them, you say, that's nice. Now what? What am I going to do for an encore? What do I do about that? You know, what do I get from it other than a false high? It doesn't add up. Black people, the code says black people should stop showing off to each other. Now, if you can afford to have nice things, by all means, do so. If you got a 19-bedroom house, have it. You got that kind of money. But don't invite anybody over there to show it off to. Just walk from room to room and enjoy it. Enjoy the ocean view and all the rest of it with your three sailboats out there. See? But don't invite no old school chums over there to enjoy what you have or show off to it, all right? Because that's what we do, and that is just as primitive as it can be. It's not intelligent. It's nothing. Because where did you get it? Got it from the white supremacists. I don't care what you did to get it. That's where you got it. So what are you showing off? You're showing off their thing. That doesn't make anything out of you.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, January 26th, 2017. So I have been told. This is our weekly Thursday broadcast, Workplace Racism. Please dial in, share your experiences, suggestions, problems as it relates to racism, white supremacy on the job. If you have figured out some methods that help minimize conflict with other black people on the job, minimize conflict with other white coworkers, feel free. That is the type of information that we need. Anyone who has got things to where, hey, they can just go to work. They don't have to be concerned about being written up, terminated, demoted, denied raises or promotions. If you have gotten things to where you can be relatively comfortable and unpestered on the job, you should be one of the first people to dial in. The number 641-715-3640, and the code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. The number again, 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press star 6 if you would like to participate. Actually, if you want to speed things up, you can just press star 61, and that'll raise your hand. You won't have to do anything else. We'll see you on the switchboard, and we can get you on a line. Again, I don't say this on any of our other programs, but for the Workplace Racism broadcast specifically, this is not something for black people victims of racism to just spectate. To come and listen at the troubles or triumphs that, you know, black people who call in, victims of racism who dial in, to just kind of listen, you know, and be entertained. Like, oh, this is great. I can just spend my little Thursday evening listening to what they're talking about. What happened to them on the plantation? No, that is not what this is about. This is about sharing. Dr. Welsing spoke about this regularly, and I totally concede it is not the most enjoyable, pleasant experience to talk publicly on a radio broadcast, no less, about difficulties that you've had on the job. A lot of times it can be stressful, embarrassing, humiliating, all of the above. to share. But I think it's so important. Just number one, we have a lot of black people, particularly younger black people, where they're just not getting constructive information. They're not getting honest information about the horrors that are waiting for every single black person on the job. And that's one of the ways that we can work against racism, about racism, white supremacy, not keeping their secrets and just talking about the terrorism that we observe, or the terrorism that has been targeted on us at work. It doesn't necessarily have to be as, you know, intense as when they actually go ahead and take your job, your ability to support yourself, but just the things that we hear on a regular basis, the unwanted touching and rude commentary and expecting you to do more than the initial job duties that you were hired to carry out, the myriad of experiences, you're certainly not being compensated correctly. Really important to dial in. Also remind folks about policy and procedure. You do not want to wait until there is a problem, until you begin to be mistreated, to then go and glance at that policy and procedure. You want to read the entire thing. And I say the best way to do it is to just not read the whole thing in one setting. Break it up. You know, you can take a week, take 2 weeks, depending on how big your manual is, and just do 10, 15 minutes a night. You can sit back, find your most comfortable spot. For those of you who are, you know, fortunate enough to live in an area where it's warm right now, you can go sit outside on your porch area in the evening sun and just take 15 minutes. You can have a little bit of tea, sit quietly, and just read 10, 15 pages and make notes about what's supposed to be happening. And then when you go on the job, you'll see, is the policy being enforced? Is it being enforced consistently, equally? Everybody being treated the same? You can see that. Then when there's an issue, you'll already know what's supposed to happen. You can just take a quick refresher so you know what the policy as stated in writing for your particular company is. Very important. You don't want to wait till the last minute. And as I've said, dial in and share if there are any interesting parts of your policy and procedure in terms of the wording that's ambiguous, that doesn't make sense, or if it looks like it's written in a way that would allow for manipulation, their discretion, so that they can mistreat you because they've got some vague language in how their rules have been written. But definitely share. This is not for spectators. Dial in, share your experiences, problems, triumphs, whatever it is. Black entrepreneurs as well. As always, if you are not able to call, you can email untiljustice@gmail.com and I'll read your commentary on the air. You can get feedback that way. The address again, untiljustice@gmail.com. And I'll make sure to check my mail as we roll through the program. Folks already wrote in some of the workplace racism commentary we already had. So this is from our young scholar in the Bay Area. He calls in regularly. He's writing about his class, his high school class in California. In my history class, we have been learning about the Haitian Revolution. It was a cruel time where French colonists would export Africans from their land and put them on a strange island to work on the plantation from dawn until dusk. They were tortured on a daily basis with many different methods. The enslaved people were sick of being treated this way, so they started putting up forms of resistance against slavery, one of those forms being the practice of voodoo. The religion has been highly misinterpreted, especially by the Western media. When I was younger, I thought that voodoo was another form of evil witchcraft, where you place spells on people and summon certain spirits. This is all a lie. Voodoo is actually a way that slaves would gain their independence and dignity at the end of all the hard work they performed during the day. Europeans wanted to get rid of this and convert the slaves to Christianity. That is all I wanted to share. Young scholar talking about his work environment, which for young people would be the classroom. Next segment, someone wrote in. Okay, person said, I just wanted to share an experience that I had recently. I transferred into another school in the district. This means that I had a completely different schedule. Before my transfer, I was told by my suspected racist boss to put in grades for the school I was leaving, and that the teacher, who is also a suspected racist in the school I was transferring to, would provide me with his grades, being that the marking period was almost over. He was also transferring to another school in the district. I sent an email out to him just to confirm that he would be providing me with students' grades, and of course, I got no response. I waited a few days and emailed him again. No response. After I had transferred to the school for about a week, I emailed him once more. This time, I CC'd the principal. He responded immediately. He stated the kids were graded off a participation and classwork, and he didn't have many grades. I responded and CC'd the principal again and stated that it would be good for us to meet so that I can get a copy of the grades he does have. He did not respond. Grades were due the following week. I emailed the principal and told him that the teacher had not gotten back to me and I will not be putting in grades for him because I didn't know all the students yet and had only been there about 2 weeks. The principal told me that it was the other teacher's responsibility and he will make sure that the teacher contacts me. The next day, I noticed a text on my phone from this suspected racist teacher. "Hey, buddy. I've been a little busy planning lessons at the new school and at the new school I am. It's been really hectic. Do you mind just putting the grades in yourself?" I deleted the text immediately. On the same day, I let the principal know that I have not heard from him. He said, "That's strange. He said he contacted you." I said, "Yeah, that is funny. I didn't get any emails from him." The next day, the principal said that the teacher finally put in the grades. The following day, I checked the grades and they were in. However, I closely examined them and noticed that they were not valid. Students that usually have trouble in class received A's and some of the brightest students barely passed. It was clear that he just made up grades, not to mention that he did not put any comments down to support the students' grades, which all teachers in our district are required to do. With all the bogus grades, no parents complained. Everything was fine. This happens quite often. I have even heard administrators admit that most teachers make up grades. I would advise any attempted parents that suspect that their child's grades could be invalid to ask the teacher who provided the grade to show evidence of the grade given. I think this would help a great deal because many teachers make up grades, especially in schools that are mostly non-white, specifically black schools, because they know that parents will not check and they believe that their child's grades are accurate and justified. Wowie, and what a transition from our young scholar writing in and talking about his experience. But fascinating, and that has been a trend, I think, over the last at least few months, people calling in and talking about how race soldiers on their job, whether it's incompetence, laziness, a little bit of both, but them not completing their duties, how that ends up having an adverse impact on the black person's ability to get their work done. And sometimes they end up being the one that gets blamed, that gets held culpable for things not being done when it was actually a white person that was not doing her or his job that was holding up progress. But that theme has been running. It sounds like this person with those emails, that is an immediate form of public written documentation about what is happening and the communication to address a problem. That is phenomenal. I think a lot of people have been saying that Mr. Edward Williams Emmy, I think Roz, I think a lot of folks have been saying that anytime when you start having issues like this, to go ahead and do those emails and do the carbon copies and what have you, so that other whites, particularly more powerful white people who have the ability to get things rolling, if that means getting somebody fired or whatever they need to do to get the problem solved, copying them in the email. That way everybody has electronic documentation of what was said, when it's date stamped, time stamped, and, you know, this is how we responded. So sounds like the person did a great job and had some great counter racist suggestions. I have other people that wrote in. I will get to their commentary as we go. We'll get to the phone lines. People that dialed in, the number 641-715-3640. The code is 564-943-pound. Press star 61 if you would like to participate. Again, star 61 if you would like to participate. I'll see your hand. We'll get you on the line. Also, really quick, we are officially on SoundCloud as well. I contemplated live broadcasting on SoundCloud as well. Decided not to today. I might do so in the future, but the archive for today's program, it will be on SoundCloud, as will all future Cal's programs. And if there are folks who, if we have anybody out there who is bored, or you have free time where you would like to help in uploading the 16,000 archived episodes of the Cows chronologically so that they'll all be at SoundCloud, drop me a line, an email. Some folks said that they'd be down to volunteer, but it certainly is not going to happen unless we have help. That's just a massive amount of moving and uploading and a whole lot of work. So if we have folks out there who are bored or need something to do constructive with your time and energy, let me know. We can put you to work and see if we can get those programs archived at SoundCloud. But all the future broadcasts will be there. Even the program we did yesterday is already at SoundCloud, and I think it's soundcloud.com/RWSWJ. Right on. Folks who dialed in who have a hand up, line should be open. Feel free to participate.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Hey, y'all. How everybody doing, man? It's Keyman 713 calling from North Dakota. Man, I nearly fully said, man, because I don't like working. I don't understand the concept of it. People say we need it. But I ain't been able to join in, man, because it's been kind of rough, you know, trying to work two jobs, but I've been hearing, listening, you know, to the archive or whatever at work, and I kind of, like, feel like somebody else will come, like, it's very, see, like, when I start getting into looking at racism, see, I see it in everything, and it makes it real hard for me to function. You know, because I ain't the type of person where I can't smile and I can't act good around white people, right? So anyhow, the things have been going on with me here, work, right? So first thing, like, you know, I work in a plant, man, like a uniform. Man, every month they have these safety meetings, what they call safety meetings. And so we go up in there. And you got the head maintenance man, the foreman, the HR lady, and the GM. And they be in there just talking, and it's just like everything is just, it's like politics. It's like watching the Republican Party speech or something. You know, and they in there, oh, we did good, and production is up real good, and we just want to let you guys know that we appreciate all the hard work, and we get paid holidays, right? So how it go is the day before the day that we off, you got to work the day before you off and the day after you off in order to get, you know, holiday paid for. So that Friday, before New Year, I ended up having to go to court that morning, but I got to work by 9 o'clock. So I went from 9 to 4:30. So then I get paid. I'm like, you know, I see that, you know, it ain't come out right. Well, I seen the white man that morning. When I come back, I say, hey, you know, when you get time, let me get with you and look at last week, because my check ain't right. So now this cracker here, I don't, you know, it ain't nothing that I try to do or nothing, but it's just like I always look at people, and he can't look at me for some reason. His eyes be moving and stuff. So he was like, okay. So then I ain't see him no more. So around about 2 o'clock, I go up to the HR lady, and I told her, I said, man, you know, I'm trying to see if I should have got paid holiday, you know what I mean? So she put it up on the computer. She was like, well, yeah, you came in Friday, you came, you worked from 9:06 to 4:30, you should have got paid holiday. So she called the white man. He done went to my night. She called him. When she on the phone with him, he tell her exactly why. See, he went in the computer and took the paid holiday from me. And he knew exactly why he did it. And he said it. But when I was talking, when I stopped him, you know, first thing in the morning, he ain't like, he ain't know what I was talking about. Like, you know, he was going to get with me later on and investigate and find out, you know. But that's one thing. And see, Gus, you always say white people lie. Right, but now deception, like being deceiving, see, that's just like lying to me. If a cracker got moving eyeballs, like he can't look at you, you know, it's something going on. So, you know, with that, and then another thing happened, right? What I noticed, it's been a lot of Africans come here, right? We, matter of fact, we got a whole bunch of. Now, one thing I see, white people don't mind hiring Africans. See, they from the continent, they pretty much get on faster than the slave will, you know. So they, and like Dr. Kirby said, see, when you effeminate, because see, I noticed that these gay Africans, like the feminine Africans, they have them working around females, the white women, you know, they got them all up there, you know. And so what happened is, one of the white supremacists said something to one of the girls and made her cry. And guess what? Man, every last African in there walked out the building. Every one of them walked out there behind that girl. And now that kind of threw me, because I was like, but they done came back, though, but they moved the girl that cried. But they sure, they all walked up out of them. Man, there's been so much going on with me, man. it's a Mexican up here. He's an older dude, you know. He's from Texas too, man. I think from Laredo, but me and him, we be kind of talking, so I'm standing back there talking to him before yesterday, because we finna have a Christmas party this Saturday. You know, they always had a party late. So me and the Mexican, we back there talking. And then we just got a new GM, I think, like in October, because the old white man retired last year. So we got a new GM, but he been there. He been working there. He just was at a lower position. And so me and the dude back there talking. He come back there. He asked the Mexican. He said, "Hey, man, you coming to the Christmas party Saturday?" And he was like, yeah, I'm gonna come down. Man, that crackhead looked at me and he didn't ask me nothing. He didn't walk on, right? And it just be like, man, I can see it, man. I mean, these crackers, they're racist, man. They, and no matter what they say at work, it's always something different than what they trying to portray it as, you know. But if you a certain type of way, they won't even try to portray nothing. I mean, they really don't even fool with me. It's like these people, they don't even like me. They don't even know me. And it's the way I look or something. And I mean, I don't mind because I feel it too. I feel the same way. And I don't like working. But it's just like, sometimes, man, I be telling my mama, like, I wish I never would have kind of, you know, started reading and trying to figure things out because, like, I can't really get myself on track with these people, man. And that's all I got, man. I'm with my life. Thank you.
Thank you for
Can
sharing.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. I just wanted to say real quick, thank you for sharing the caller in North Dakota. He dialed in numerous times. We've heard from him. Just on what Mr. Fuller said about not wanting to work, I think a lot of black people can empathize. It's not that black people are lazy. The racist stereotype is when you are being terrorized and forced to work under grueling and torturous conditions and not compensated adequately for the work that you do. Of course, you are not going to exactly be enthused about labor. And that has been black people's experience worldwide for a long time as it relates to whites. So I think that's super logical. I suspect it's just that the racists that are in your work environment, they're doing what white people do, practicing racism with your. I just said something about compensation. That's a typical thing. And that's one of those policy and procedure I think can be helpful. And just being able to point out, I think Roz had a similar issue with his compensation being inaccurate and always to his deficit. It's never compensation is messed up and you got an extra $300 or something like that. But knowing the policy and the audit procedure can be helpful to try to get some of those issues corrected. And just though I think even some other people have dialed in also where you were talking about, you know, just getting a feeling them not inviting you to the Christmas party explicitly and not want to look you in the eyes is because they are racist and they're just mistreating you all the time, probably talking about you bad behind your back, because that's what they do about all of us. And then they've messed over your pay and that sort of thing. They know they're mistreating you. They know that they are totally niggerizing you, as Mr. Fuller would say they do to all of us in the system of racism, white supremacy. So that's just my quick thoughts on what the caller had to share. The male caller who just spoke up, did you have a question or something you wanted to add to what we just heard from the male caller, or did you have your own commentary you wanted to share?
No, I have my own commentary.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, okay. Okay. I'm called from Florida, right here in Florida. I'm a long-time listener, first-time caller. I had a job, you know, a while back as a merchant marine, working on a tugboat. I was the only black person on the boat, and that experience on that boat was so, it was, the whole time I was there was terrorized, and they eventually ended up firing me at the end. But some of the things that happened, the thing that caused me to get fired was while I was on the boat, I heard all the worst jokes, you know, the worst black jokes. Like one was, how do you piss off the black man? You know, drop the watermelon. They had another one. Does a black man become a nigger when you leave the room? You know, I used to, you know, hear stuff like that. And one night it was the first game of the you know, the preseason for football, and I was sitting in the galley on the tugboat, and we were, you know, it was, everybody was asleep, you know, I was in the galley getting ready to watch the game. I had did all my cleaning up and stuff around the boat, because I was a deckhand on the boat. I did all the cleaning and stuff like that. And I was sitting up there watching the game, and one of the white guys come from the back. He just comes in, and while I'm watching it, he just start turning it. And I was like, "What you doing, man? I'm watching this." And he's like, and he's just like, "Man, I'm trying to see the weather, man." And I was like, "Oh, well, I'm watching this, man." He go and start fixing his coffee. I turn it back to the game. He comes back and asks me, "What am I doing?" Like I was doing something wrong. And he turned it back to the weather. And I told him, "Don't touch the TV again." He went upstairs and told the captain that, you know, I was messing with the TV or whatever. And the captain just pretty much told me to find something to do and gave him the TV. And then after that tour was over, I came home. And then while I was home, I got a letter in the mail saying that basically it was a letter of termination. You know, I wouldn't be able to go back out on the boat. You know, yeah, so that's one of my stories. And something that just happened recently on a job that I have now. It was like so many times I hear on this show is that they didn't have my money right on my check. And when I went to see about it, the lady told me, yeah, I see where they messed up on your check. We'll have it direct deposit in your account on tomorrow or whatever. And I called her the next day because I was off, and I was like, it's not in my account. She said, okay, well, we put it in the mail. This it'll be she said they did it like FedEx the next day or something like that, and she had the tracking number. So I called her after the time went by, and I was like, well, I don't see nothing, you know. I said, can you just give me the tracking number or whatever? And she was like hold on a second, and gave the phone to somebody else. And one of my supervisors got on the phone and was like telling me, I think we're square here, Carl, as far as your money goes. And, you know, if you want to come in, we can talk about it. But, yeah. And after all that stuff, that lady told me all those lies about my money, you know. It's just, yeah, those are my two experiences. I'll keep my line. Thanks.
Wow. Always good to hear from first-time callers. Right on. And that, too, I think that's always important. Us being able to reflect on our work experience, like maybe work experience from a few years back when we were more confused about racism. And then now that we have a better understanding, to be able to look back, okay, this one, we have a better understanding of why these things were happening to us. And then you can see, okay, I would have not said this. I would have not done that. I would have said this. I would have done that. I think that can be very helpful as well. And again, we have, you know, younger listeners who do not have an extensive work history. So I think it's always helpful for them to be able to hear different people's experience so they can know the types of things that they need to look out for. Obviously, your compensation is a big one since people keep bringing that up. The one thing with the racist joke, just to make sure, do you get the joke when he says, when does a black person become a nigger? When you leave the room? Meaning white people are not ignorant about racism. They know the code, at least for a while now, has been we won't call the niggers to their face. That the codification of white supremacy in the racist joke. I said those are gems. That is the one time when white people are speaking truthfully about racism. And last thing I will get in on that, just that sounds horrendous. Being on a boat where you're isolated, you can't move. Now I am stuck with a whole crew of race soldiers. Oh my, that, horrendous experience. I'm sorry you had to go through that, and I hope you are in a much better situation now. Did we have other folks that we've not heard from who either wanted to comment or had comments or questions for the two callers we've heard already, or if you had your own situation you wanted to address, feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir, Roz.
Greetings to you, Roz. Greetings to you, Gus. I'm calling you me. Greetings to you, Gus, and to the other callers and the listeners. To the caller that just spoke, I just, like you said, I can't imagine. Just the whole idea of the TV being the catalyst for him being terminated reminds me of prison. when the prisoners are fighting over what channel they're going to watch in the mess hall. That is just horrible. My dad actually was a Merchant Marine, but he was a Merchant Marine in Trinidad and Tobago, so it was him and his brother. So they were on a boat full of black people. They traveled all over the place, but my dad never told me any stories of racism that he experienced on the boat, but at least he had a crew full of black people, so I can't imagine to be the only black person on a boat full of racial terrorists and traveling with them on the water. It makes me think of Delectable Negro, when they discuss the boat, the Essex, when they ate two of the black sailors on the boat because they got stranded and they had no food and essentially starved two of the black workers and basically ate them. So that's just the most horrific thing I could think of. I'm sorry to hear about that, and I hope that the situation you're in is much more palatable, even though nothing's palatable in the system of white supremacy, but hopefully it's better than being trapped with them. To the caller in North Dakota, wow, that is just a really tough scenario too. And it's something that they do is that they and it's good that you were able to peep the body language. That's why I say it's really good to get into body language when people can't look you in the eye and things of that nature and other signs that they give that they're doing something unscrupulous. You're just not aware of exactly what it is, but you get that feeling in your gut that lets you know that they're practicing racism, white supremacy. That's something that I always implore black people to do, is to really study body language. There's great books about it and articles that will give you insight on just how to read people, and sometimes it can save your life. Also, to the young scholar, speaking of the Haitian Revolution, I love the young scholar. I wish him the best. I think he's highly perceptive and extremely intelligent young black male, and I wish him nothing but the best. He's absolutely correct. Baudouin was one of the main catalysts that facilitated the Haitian Revolution and our ability to liberate ourselves. I've talked to many African traditional priests, and I've had the experience myself, and I've been told by them that they believe, just from their position as high-functioning spiritual practitioners, that one of the biggest catalysts for the liberation of black people is African spirituality. It is something that I've experienced as well, just having readings done and following the spiritual precepts of my ancestors has very much helped me navigate the system of white supremacy. Even at times, you might get a reading that'll tell you a specific job, that you're going to get that job, and you might think, just based on the interview, you didn't get it, but you get it because the ancestors have already told you it's yours, and it's yours. So I find that African spirituality in some cases has superseded the system of white supremacy as far as facilitating sometimes my ability to navigate the system. So I think that was really beautiful that he was able to bring up. And it's something that, hopefully that more of us think about. I did have a couple of things that I wanted to speak on myself. One is I had a supervisor. I was actually sick. I'm still getting over, weirdly enough, I had oral surgery last Wednesday, and literally right afterwards, I ended up getting asthma-related bronchitis. So now I'm just trying to get myself back to 100%. So if I sound a little weird or I sound congested, that's probably why. But I was talking to my supervisor. We had a meeting, a team, and she discussed going to the women's protest in Washington, D.C., and she said that it was great to see all of these different people of different races who got together with this one purpose of, I guess, trying to let Donald Trump know what they thought of him and his presidency. And she said, which really made me think, she said that she saw that people really cared about this country. And when she said people, I'm saying white people, because the only people running things here are white people. You're white, you're a racial terrorist yourself, and all of the nonsense you're speaking of, all of this racial harmony, is nauseating because it's not the truth. And essentially, when she talked about that, she talked about something that took place when they were traveling along the route of the protest. She talked about there was a church that she passed, and when she passed the church, some white woman was ringing the church bells. And she started ringing the church bells as they were passing with the Star Spangled Banner. And people stopped in the middle of the street and started singing the Star Spangled Banner as this woman was playing it with the church bells. And she said the woman had done this multiple times, and at one point she came out and like waved at the crowd, and the crowd went crazy and gave her some sort of accolades for doing what she did. And I had a coworker, a black male coworker, that really close to, and he's helped me quite a bit, and I've helped him. And right after we left the meeting, I said, well, do you know that the Star Spangled Banner is the most racist gangster rap song in history? And he said, really? I said, yeah. I said, there's a stanza that's missing from the Star Spangled Banner that most people don't sing that specifically has to do with the subjugation of black people as slaves and the fact that we would never, basically never not be enslaved in this country. And then I actually sent him the information so he could see it for himself. And he laughed because we've talked about white supremacy before. And he laughed and he said, wow. He said, nothing surprises me in this world anymore. I said, in a system of white supremacy, nothing should surprise you. And something like that should let you know that you're dealing with nothing but a bunch of wholesale racists that like to skin and grin and smile in your face. And we're nothing but niggas to them. When exactly what the previous call said, when you leave the room, you're a nigga to them. And he just smiled. And he said, thanks. You know, he said, thanks. And I said, no problem, anytime. And also, today I had a coworker that had an experienced black female, and she had taken a call twice from this white terrorist that called in. I work in a health insurance company, and she had spoken to the woman first. The first call went pretty much without a hitch. She was able to help the woman and get her off the phone. The second time she called in, the woman eventually requested a supervisor, but refused to let her know the reason she was requesting a supervisor. So my coworker actually went to a supervisor, put her on hold, or went to the supervisor and explained to him that essentially this woman is requesting a supervisor, but she's refusing to tell me the reason. So the supervisor said, do not escalate any ticket if she's not going to give you a viable reason, because we're not going to waste time, you know, trying to figure out what her issue is. If she's not going to tell anything, don't escalate the ticket and let her call back, and maybe she'll tell the next person what her issue was. So that's exactly what she did. And the woman called back, got another white terrorist from our location in Arizona, and the white terrorist ended up having this long conversation with the white female terrorist that called in about our coworker, which is a no-no. In any company, even if a person who's calling in has a negative experience with one of the people that works there, you're not supposed to badmouth the person that you're working with or your fellow employee, coworker, simply because it makes the company look bad. It looks like one set of people are doing one thing and another set of people are doing the other thing. And then also it just shows dissension and just doesn't look good. And I've seen people get written up for that at the companies. So my coworker, the black female coworker, ended up speaking to one of our supervisors about what transpired. He ended up pulling the phone calls and was able to determine that she handled the calls correctly and that the person who was bad-mouthing her with the member needed to be reprimanded for what they did simply because they're completely wrong. They never verified what actually happened on the phone call. They just assumed this white psychopath was telling the truth and actually just jumped in and started talking about this person as well. So she's looking to move forward with getting this person reprimanded. So I'm going to find out more about that probably tomorrow. So I'll probably have an update on that for next week. But it just goes to show that white people automatically, and a lot of us are trained to do the same thing, to just automatically believe white people. This previous caller who discussed the working in the school and that the teacher was just telling him to, you know, give the person the grades himself, and that was it. That's something that I personally experienced. I remember in high school, there was a young man that could not read in our class, and he was a very, very poor black male, and he would always have this, like, three pairs of pants that he would share with his two brothers, and I think they had, like, five shirts. So he really had very little clothing. He was teased a lot and mistreated. I used to come to his defense on quite a few occasions because I didn't like the other young black children disrespecting him because of the poverty that he came from. And ultimately, over time, I realized that he couldn't read. And he ended up getting pushed through. And they just basically let him graduate, even though the young man couldn't read or write. So, again, it lends to the fact that when we send our children to our enemies to be taught, that our enemies do not have our best interests at hand at heart at all. And ultimately, the best thing that black parents can do is double check these teachers. Don't ever trust them. Don't ever take anything they say about your child at face value. That is something I experienced with my mother, and it caused quite a bit of problems for me coming up. And our relationship is tattered to this very day, but that was one of the things that contributed to that was her thinking or believing everything that these racist teachers would tell her about me. And I had no interest in school because I just felt like school was a place that I was being used. They were not teaching me anything of note. And I actually learned more from people like Dr. Ben than I ever learned in that class, in those classes. So I just was turned off with the whole school process. And it's something that we really have to think about, is that in all areas of people activity, white people are the worst diabolical liars, and don't ever believe anything they say and take it at face value. When it comes to your child's education, double, triple check, let them prove to you what those grades are, why they gave them those grades. Just do whatever you have to protect the sanity of your children if you're going to send them to the enemy schools. My thing, I would say, is to take them completely out and homeschool them. That will save you a world of trouble and protect your child from being abused and potentially killed or mauled in their environments. Thank you so much, and I'll mute my line.
Other folks have comments here. You all are A+. I would even say some of you all are much more courageous than myself in being willing to reach out and share constructive info with other black people on the job. Seems like, you know, at least a number of you all have had positive experiences where the black people you've shared the information with have been receptive. So right on. Great examples of black self-respect. Other folks. Yes, sir. Rob in Wisconsin, we can hear you.
Okay. Greetings, Gus. Roz, rest of the callers on the line. I'm still growing, and I want to say thank you to the first-time caller. Thank you for participating. The participation is important to the program, and I know that sharing is not the easiest thing to do, and whatever we're talking about when we have to open ourselves up. So thank you for that. And I know being on that boat was a pretty man. I would have been scared, just being honest. So thank you for sharing that as well. I had the same observation as Gus did, being isolated like that. And the observation I had was hearing the nigga jokes, and then at the same time doing all the cleaning. So thank you for sharing that. And I got a few observations from the classroom from today and earlier in the week. I shared last time and expressed that I had a interaction with a black female that didn't go too well, and I excused myself from the classroom. So today, when I came back in, I was late, unfortunately. So when I got in, it was some information that I didn't get, and the teacher referenced me leaving the last week, and I said that I was feeling ill, and I didn't reference what happened last week at all. And I noticed that the black female that I had the negative interaction with last week, when we broke into groups, she was actually in my group, and I noticed that she was being extra helpful and seemed like she was going out of her way to be extra nice. And I think that was a positive, I think that was something positive to report this week. By me not responding and then not referencing the situation, just kind of diffusing it, seemed like it worked to have constructive interaction between black people. Okay, and so earlier in the week, I got a gym class. A white male teacher in that class, and he was talking about something that's going on in Milwaukee right now. We have a situation with lead in the water. They're saying it's the pipes that's leading into the house, old pipes or, you know, whatever. So when he started talking about this, he started to say that certain communities have been affected by this lead in the water. But instead of saying communities, he said certain houses. And, you know, he kind of cut his eyes at me when he said that. I'd like to see, I think specifically if I caught it, because I'm 36 and I'm probably one of the oldest males in the classroom. It's a older black female in the classroom, maybe 50. Everyone else in the classroom, I would say, just graduated high school. And so I noticed that when I spoke in the class, he started paying attention to me. So he was referencing the shootings in Chicago. I forget specifically what he said, but I noticed him cutting his eyes at me as well when he said that. I think checking my level of confusion. And my response was just to act kind of confused. I've learned that not being the quote-unquote outspoken, militant, radical Negro hasn't worked in my favor. I think more of a spook by the door approach is more effective in the battle that I'm engaged in right now. And I forget what class exactly this is, but I have a black female professor, and this kind of really dampened my spirits for the week. She was talking about the LGBT community, and she was referencing that now they're referring to themselves as pronouns. And so she started going into, like, okay, so if I'm a straight guy, I will refer to myself as a him, or I'm really confused about it right now. And I expressed my confusion. Like, she was explaining it, and then she was trying to move through the content quickly. So she was like, everybody got that? And I was like, nah, you know, I'm confused. And then when I expressed my confusion, man, she went into about a 15, 20-minute explanation of how me specifically she was talking to, but addressing it to the whole class, of how we have to learn about the gay community, accept these people, and so my observation from that situation was that I observed a black female defending her job. And I'll leave that one. So I had another class with a black male professor, and this was just really not that significant, but it stood out to me. He was going over, the semester just started, so he was going over kind of like the rules and expectations of the classroom. And he was telling us that we can bring food, but, you know, don't bring no whole dinner up in here. You know, if you bring some chicken, some Popeyes up in here, you know what that's going to do. And then everybody kind of started laughing and, you know, whatever. Oh, one more observation. And this is an observation from a school teacher, black female. They have young adults under them. I think it's called like city year or something like that. But these younger adults is kind of like an in-between as far as like the teacher and the student. So the teacher may delegate different responsibilities to the person that's employed by city year. Okay, so they have a black male that is presenting himself as a female working at the school, and he came in. He be wearing like real tight jogging pants that's like exposing his genitals, and this particular day he came in with hair extensions. So the young black male had a natural response. He was like, ugh, what is it? You know, and so when he had that response, the black female that's employed with City Year, I want to say she's over the age of 18. She, I want to say, is quote-unquote gay. And she explained to him how he has to accept this lifestyle. And I don't know to the extent of what she said to the young man, but she made him cry. And thank you for listening. And I'll mute my line.
Wowee. That is a lot. I will make sure that I get in. I think the black self-respect aspect should not be minimized or overlooked. I think that's really important. The last week you talked about the conflict that you had, or it was certainly uncomfortable for you and feeling like she was being discourteous or hostile in the way that your interaction went. And then this week, feeling just the way that you handled it and trying to move forward and not going back at her and that sort of thing, feeling like maybe she was trying to overcompensate and be extra nice this time around. Like, hey, if all of us, Gus T. Renegade, you can put my name at the top of the list. I think all of us, I think the better we can get at diffusing conflict with other non-white people, workplace and beyond, that will move things forward rapidly in terms of solving this problem. White people, they are a small minority on the planet. Dr. Welsing emphasized that all the time. That is one of the have-dos, to just have us in conflict and fussing at black supervisors and black managers or just black coworkers and growling at them all day and having them be the culpable for all of our problems, when that's not the case at all. Like, as much as we can do to minimize conflict, and that's not saying that you accept mistreatment, but as much as we can do to mitigate conflict with other non-white people, the better. I feel like the whole anti-sexual thing, people will address, people love Area 8, and that will probably drift us out of workplace racism, but I thought that was extremely important as well. I know Allison Manswell talked about being a black male in the work environment and not being able to be too masculine. She wrote Listen In about racism in the workplace. That other folks have commentary they wanted to share? Either. Oh, Thomas in New York. Yes, sir.
Good evening to all fellow victims, yourself as well, Gus. To what Rob just said, astute observation I'm making is my daughter came in from school with this project, and she somehow, running for some council on trying to draw attention to the LGBT community, and she needed money to buy some lollipops, and she was handing them out with these rainbow things on them. And, of course she doesn't agree with my views on this issue, but I'm saying this is something that she wasn't taught in the house, you know, that has views, because I think that, sometimes my uncodified speech and things might come out, but, this is definitely something that they're being taught in school, and it's even on the college level. I see with Rob, that's just like, I see them starting them early with the notion that this is natural behavior. And I just wanted to say to the guy, man, as everyone else, I'm sure, I couldn't imagine being on that boat with those white people. I guess the only person that normally calls in that would have something close to that would be firefighter, because he had to live in the firehouse with them. But I think he said that sometimes it was other blacks. But, man, that was just a terroristic situation. And I'm glad you made it out alive, man. Because that's, man, they could have thrown you over any time. Oh, he fell, he slipped, you know. And that was, and to get fired over the television, I mean, that's just so, that's just how they do things. I mean, how dare that nigga change the television back to the football game when I turn to the weather? You know, just, I could just see that tackiness, how it goes down. At my job at the hospital, you know, it's a place where you see a lot of stuff that's all interwoven into the system. However, it might not be, it's just very different. However, not to get into that, in a certain position at night, you know, you work at a different department. They have one person per department. And occasionally I have to do what they call cycle cleaning. That's pretty much just going through the operating rooms and making sure that we sterilize everything, all the equipment, you know, just, you know, sail into the floor, you know, make sure that it's, you know, able to be functional for surgery if need be. You know, it's a job that you do, and you do it by yourself, and it's pretty boring, but, you know, you do it. However, there are people who work within that department, and in the operating room, of course, it's like a red line, and once you cross that line, you have to be in scrubs, so it requires you to put, you know, the scrubs on over your clothes, or some people go upstairs and just take off their clothes and put the scrubs on, you know, however they might do it. And there's certain technicians that are always there on duty. I guess they prep the rooms, you know, and they also are there just in case, you know, an emergency. I work overnight, so in case something emergency happens and they have to do an emergency surgery or whatever, which happens often. Particular, the people who work in there is three at the overnight, and there's always two of them there. It's a Filipino lady, a Filipino man, and a white Polish woman. So, before I started working within this department, I trained with another black male, and his conversation with this white Polish woman, and this is someone with a real strong Polish accent. And I would say she's in the late 50s, maybe early 60s. And he has very sexual conversations with her. And, you could kind of see, you know, he's trying to turn her on. And it does. And I don't think that he would ever, you know, have sex with me. But you never know. But either way, you know, it's like he just makes comments, you know, and it's usually always a comment to the effect of, you know, how he would do, you know, someone or whatever. So I only trained with him 2 days, and I went through that for 2 days with him. This is months ago. And since then, I've worked in this department, you know, maybe 20, 30 times. And some of the time, she's one of the two techs there. And she's always very, you know, nice, and she remembers my name, and always offers me something to eat and all that stuff, you know, but never has any of these sexual type of conversations with me, of course, because I wouldn't allow it. However, one day last week, I'm working in this department, and I was really trying to be nosy because I saw someone whom I knew, and something happened to their child, you know, on the streets, and they were in the OR. So I was working in the OR, so I decided, you know, I told them I'll get some information. So I decided to be nosy, so I, you know, went over to her, and she, you know, told me what I wanted to know. And she started this conversation with me. She says, you know why I started working in the operating room. And I said, no. He said, oh, I came to this country 20 years ago, and I was working with this doctor. And I wanted to be like a, you know, nurse aide. But I chose to come to Jersey City to work in the hospital because they had a lot of black people. And I said, well, really, why, you know? And the guy who I work with will always say, oh, you know, she cries when stuff happens to these, you know, always, you know, when someone gets shot or something, she cries or whatever. However, she said she was working with this doctor, and he did a surgery on a black male. And the whole time that he did the surgery, the male's penis was hard. And she never saw anything like it. And since then, she's been fascinated with black men. And that's why she works in the surgery. And I said, wow. So I just, you know, thought that was very interesting. Anyway, yep, exactly. Just very interested. I don't, you know, speak to the person often. I generally, when I do that department, I, you know, put myself in the room, you know, and I do the work. I don't, I usually put my headphones on or something, and I'm, you know, listening to music or whatever. But it's just, you know, very ironic that that came out in the conversation we had. Also, I wanted to say, I have the Young Scholar on the Saturday show. I have a question I wanted to ask him because I've been, you know, trying to research, you know, trying to get in tune with my kids and see what they're going through. And, you know, kids today are, I guess, you know, the I don't know, man, with all the technology, they're not quite there. So, you know, I've been trying to catch up with some of the music, and I had some questions about that. But other than that, I'm with my line, guys. Oh, as far as the daytime job, as I told you, you know, they brought back the gentleman whose place I was taking, but he had cancer. He's a young black male, but he calls himself a Native American, but obviously black male. And he, you know, I feel sorry for the young, you know, the brother, but he's come back and he's be able to work a half a day and maybe 3 days a week. And as I told you last time I called in, he has displayed uncodified behavior. However, I come to find out that he has his goal in coming back is not to no longer do that job, it's to become a broker. And he took his broker's license 2 years ago, and working in the insurance firm, no one has picked him up as a broker. And I was told it's because of his uncodified behavior. So his plan is to approach them now with that proposition. And I'm just really curious to see how that goes for him, because based on what I've seen thus far, I can't see none of those white managers wanting to work around that. And I'll meet my line. Thank you.
Hey, Gus.
Yes, sir.
I wanted to know if I could speak to something that Rob discussed about his interaction with one of his professors.
Let me try and nab some of the folks who haven't shared at all, and then we can sure. Get your additional commentary in as well, Roz.
Thank you.
For sure, for sure. All of the folks that we have not heard from at all, if you either have questions for any of the callers that we've heard from previously, or if you have your own commentary, feel free. The number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *6 if you would like to participate. I'll try to email the Young Scholar and see if he can hang out with us Saturday so you can get your question to him, Thomas in New York. Folks that we have not heard from at all, Dearest Ashley, if you want to ring back in, we can get your line open as well. Just I try to mute it sometimes because we pick up a lot of the background noise. But if you want to dial back in, we'll get you as well. Folks, we have not heard from at all. Did you have commentary?
Yeah.
Let's
a lot of people.
Female caller.
Yes. Hello. Thank you for taking my call. This is Jay from Ohio. I called actually a couple, I think like the week before last, and I was explaining like my situation, also my mother's situation as far as her supervisors or managers wanting to discipline her because of the discretion that she used when dealing with an issue with an associate under her that she had spoke to or whatever with who they saw that as a friend of hers. Well, she ends up trying to fight the reprimand or what have you with the HR department, and she quickly learned that that didn't matter anyway. She also said that one of her supervisors had made like the real tacky comment of, and it was a white female who had said, "Oh, and you wanted a promotion as if, like, she was such a horrible supervisor, and for her to think that she should qualify for a promotion is just preposterous." My mother told the HR people that, the HR lady, also another white person, or maybe it was an Asian lady, a non-white Asian lady, but they basically just said, "Oh, well, she just shouldn't have said that," and just left it at that. I just wanted to share like a past experience when I was more confused than what I am now. I think I was actually listening to the archives and just hearing a black mother talk about how this one white lady was trying to offer her child some candy and just wouldn't let up about the candy. Well, at my job, I end up getting into, not necessarily an argument, but having this back and forth with a white associate in a different department about something that I had worked on, and he was very rude, also very tacky in the email. I ended up going to my supervisor saying, "Hey, well, can you please make sure that he doesn't contact me anymore?" My supervisor is the same one I have now, also a white male, white man, and I don't know what he said to either the other man's supervisor or the other man, but I end up never speaking to him again, or and never having to have an email exchange with him again. Well, fast forward a couple of months, we have a training with people from different areas, different departments, and he happens to be in the training, and he ends up sitting across the table from me. Well, throughout the training, I asked the trainer questions, and probably no less than three times, he's answering the questions that I'm asking. Now, the gentleman has never worked in the same area as I have worked in. He just kind of, I don't know what he did, but he never has actually done what I have done in the company, and I've actually verified that through other people. Well, that didn't stop him from still attempting to answer my questions, even though I was actually directed towards the trainer. I didn't even have to say the trainer's name before I asked the question, just to try to, bring it home to him that I'm not asking you the question, not even looked his way, because I recognized immediately who he was. And, of course, as the white people in the training, even like his supervisor and his supervisor was there. No one said anything. No one suggested, "Hey, she's not asking you a question," nothing. They just all remained quiet. Well, one day someone brings in donuts, and I don't know if it was him who brought in the donuts or somebody else, and they're asking everybody if they want a donut. I said no, and he kind of like asked me at least several other times, "Well, it's not that bad. You can have one donut." I'm like, "No, it's not. Donuts aren't really good for you to eat." And he's like, "Oh, well, here's an apple fritter. It has fruit in it." And I was kind of a little bit angry, but then it's also it was ridiculous because it was like he could barely fit in one chair. So to take dietary advice from him would be ridiculous. So I still, you know, remain calm because I was definitely one of the very few non-white people in that training. It was, I would say, more than 70 to 80% white people, white males and females in the training. So I just tried to keep calm and try to get through the rest of the training. But that's all. I just wanted to share that. Thank you for listening.
Wow. That was Saturday when the black mother called in to tell us about going to a white office area, and this white woman kept insisting that she give her child some toxic sugar or whatever substance or what have you, after the mom had said no, and she just kept insisting. A+ in terms of managing your emotions and not getting angry with this white male race soldier in the training. I've seen that before myself, where a racist, they will mistreat, violate a non-white person, and then they will come back and, you know, it'll be some trinkets or a sandwich or whatever, something really tacky, like, oh, this is my peace offering, let's be cool, bro, you know, you're my guy again, or you're my sister again, come on, we're in it, come on, what can I do, let me take you out to lunch, come on, what can we do, and just all of that, no thanks, I'm good, let's just get back to it. That's always my view of how that sort of thing should be handled. Was it you who dialed in? I think I might have the when you called in about your personal situation before early, was it that you were experiencing any frustration on the job now that you were just trying to get information about since you've become less confused about racism, or was that someone else?
I'm sorry, can you get my phone cut out? Can you repeat the first part when you said, was it you who, and then it cut out?
Was it you that called in to tell us about just being frustrated on the job since you got a better understanding of racism and it's been difficult just being with the racists on the job, or was that someone else?
It might have been someone else because I actually work at home, but there has been frustrations, but I've definitely been able to deal with them better, especially because of this show.
Oh, right on. Thank you for clearing that up. Yeah, that's a great great anecdote from the past, and I guess we'll have to see how things evolve with your mom unless they resolved the situation just making some tacky comments that, of course, a black person doesn't deserve to be promoted or to get a raise or anything else unless things got resolved there. What to expect? Tacky, trifling, terroristic. That's about, you know, as much as it's going to be. And kind of going back with your mother's situation, going back to what Mr. Fuller talked about at the beginning of the program, just having that in mind, regardless of what your title is, even if you become, you know, in the White House, you're still a nigger in the eyes of these white folks. And they are going to remind you of that. Even if they don't do it every day, they will remind you of that. And as a victim of racism, one thing that we can do is to make sure that we remember that so that we're not caught off guard or surprised about what our position is. I've heard a multitude of people speak up before. So the other people that we have not heard from yet, if you had questions or commentary, feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, everyone. I've been listening to everybody else, and it's very interesting, everybody's weekly account of workplace racism. Just would like to say that as far as a retired firefighter myself is concerned, I heard my name come up. Yes, it could be a hostile environment. Just have to be careful, you know, in the fire station. When I first got on, actually a lot of these fire stations used to be some white person's house. So imagine you're in something as small as a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house-like situation. And the beds were actually were within a foot of one another. Then I'm pretty sure they started thinking of the idea with the idea of hiring females. Of course, the first ones were white females. And, well, it's almost at the same time that black males were being hired also. So they decided to start creating cubicles and building structured fire stations in turn. As things went on through the years, I think from the standpoint that because there was so much racism on the job, that the black firefighters primarily kind of each of us had some sort of relationship with the other one because it wasn't a whole lot of us. Probably more than likely, as far as when I got on, it was less than 100. It was less than 100. So you even though it was different shifts, you may not have knew the person personally, but you kind of like knew something about the person. And then with the advent of an organization that is called the Progressive Firefighters, which is actually the Black Firefighters of Dade County Fire Department. You form relationships in an environment where they make attempts to navigate through the system of racism, white supremacy. So that's more or less could be a constructive environment also. And when you see the person on the job, basically, it can be a constructive environment for the most part, although it sometimes didn't. I would say that last 5 or 6 years of the retired firefighter's career, I was driving the fire truck. So while we were going on that call, I don't think nobody would be messing with me then as we were en route going to a fire call or a rescue call. It depends on what it was that you're not going to mess with a driver as far as they're concerned. At least not at the risk of your own life. Moving on. Presently, as a high school football coach, is in the process of recruiting, and the high school young people are will be in the second of next month signing scholarships. The Division One college, it's different, as everyone knows, there's different divisions. The Division I-A schools primarily have already know the people that they want. They've been knowing it for a while, actually, and just waiting to sign them to athletic scholarships, so to speak. But there is a lot of opportunities that are left over. The only problem is, especially when it comes to black males, who primarily that's what I deal with, as a lot of people on this program know. There's a lot of hype with the idea of not so much about, as Mr. Fuller has said, go to college to learn something and to get a diploma, but it's primarily use college as a stepping stone to go to the NFL. There's a whole lot of hype on that, and we as a staff spend our time, because primarily, as I mentioned before, the people that I purposely work with are non-white black males. I would not work with a white male who's in charge of the coaching staff. I would put up with a white male that may be on the staff, which it has not been many over the many years that I've been coaching. But I would not tolerate and be in an environment where a white male is directly in charge of the football team. But nevertheless, in that environment, we spent a lot of time counseling, sharing with the young guys about the transition from high school to college and what you're supposed to be going to college for, and that sort of thing. And it takes up a lot of time because we have a lot of competition, unrealistic and negative competition in that light. Last thing I would say, I'm just going to give the case point. My best player, I'm the defensive coordinator, what they call a defensive coordinator. My best player, he does not fit the looks of what I just said as a best player, because most times when people look at a football player as a big, strong, looking person and that sort of thing, and he's actually is very small, very small. He's well under 6 feet, about 5, I would say probably about 5'8", and I may be exaggerating that a little bit, about 160 pounds. But he is a very good football player, and he's very smart as a football player and as a person. And so he will be signing somewhere, but it's not a Division I college, it's a Division II college, Albany State to be exact. And so I took it upon myself to kind of give him some balance, some real understanding of, look, in that type of situation, there is advantages that you have by going to an Albany State, which is a historical black college, if someone didn't know that. It's, quote unquote, that's what they're called, primarily because most of the population are non-white black students, male and female. Through talking to him about the advantages that you could have by going there, where the staff primarily look at the young people as an investment, and so they show care towards them. For instance, if you are failing in the class, they would offer help. I know it for a fact because I went to two of them myself, Langston University in Oklahoma and Grambling State University, which is in Louisiana, and they all are basically have the same nuances and the same type of people that interact with the students on the campus, as far as that concern. And our being the staff, our relationship with the players goes beyond the sport. It goes beyond football. We stay in touch with them by calling them, texting them, that sort of thing, and all the time. And, 'cause I had a long conversation with this same young person last night. And so that basically kind of like assists them to have a smooth transition as possible from the high school level into college. And even while they're in college, you know, stay in touch with a lot of them. You know, how are you doing? Is there anything that I can say or do to help you along the path, you know, whether it's not sophomore, junior, whatever in college, that sort of thing. And a lot of them end up coming back into the school system as an employees. And matter of fact, they become prime candidates to get hired on staff that I've been working on. I've worked with several of these young black males that I have actually coached when they were quote unquote children. And it's not really work. Actually, it's something that probably the day that I transitioned, I probably would have a whistle in my mouth, I guess, you know, from that standpoint. But that's basically what I have to say. And that's all I have to say right now. Thank you.
Let's see. Appreciate that, retired firefighter. If there are other folks that we have not heard at all, if you either have questions for any of our previous callers or your own commentary, feel free.
May I be heard?
May I speak?
Let's get our female call. I think that's our black mother in Detroit, or the Michigan area at least.
good evening, Justin, to the other callers and listeners. I just wanted to share my observations in the law firm where I work. I've been at this law firm, I think it's been about 9 months now, and I have, I've never worked around so many white females. It's been a while, I'll just put it like that. It's been a while since I've been working with a lot of white females, and I've observed just in this experience, they are very mean towards to one another. They do a lot of gossiping. They do a lot of backbiting. It's just a lot of tattletelling, just nitpicking, really petty things. I noticed that they don't get a lot of work done. They complain all day. And those that smoke, they take a zillion smoke breaks a day. So I just sit back and I just observe just their behavior. It's just really interesting because, again, it's been a while since I've been around this many white women. I do not socialize on the job at all for the most part. I mean, I just, you know, I speak when I'm spoken to. I'm very, very courteous. And very, you know, I'm polite, and it's because I'm. They call me quiet, and they will say, "Oh, don't talk to her. She's quiet," you know. And over the last 9 months, the firm has moved locations. So we moved into a new building, and at the other building, I sat around a different group of white women, and now that we moved, the office manager decided to change all the seats, or, you know, switch who you're sitting next to. And I thought that was interesting because I did ask her. I'm like, you know, moving me from the group, so to speak, that I was sitting around before. She said, oh, I have my reasons. She didn't share those reasons, but I just thought it was interesting. And now the group of women that I sit next to, they are very rowdy. I had emailed you the one lady. She posted her, or, you know, she had up her Trump calendar, and she's really rowdy, loud, and obnoxious. She had her calendar up, and she actually sits right next to me on the inauguration day. So I just observe, and the things that I do to just kind of disconnect, I'm working every day, but now that I'm working to be not as confused, I just remember how I used to be when I was more confused working. I wanted to fit in. I wanted to be liked. I wanted to advance in the company. I wanted to make friends. I think that was a part of my wants when I was working. But now it's like I'm the exact opposite. I just want my paycheck to be correct, especially after, you know, listening to a few of the other callers. You know, it's one of the things that I have to make sure I'm doing the math and making sure I'm not getting cheated. But I just want my paycheck. I want to be left alone, and I want to do my work. And it's just so different. Now going to work every day, I have my earplugs in. I'm listening to the cows. I'm listening to some constructive, just something where I can disassociate with everyone in the firm. And the last thing that I will share, one of the attorneys, he brought his wife and his two. He has a son and a daughter. I think they were like 3 and 5. And the little girl, she was walking around trying to sell Girl Scout cookies. And they came up to me, and they caught me off guard. So she was like, oh, do you want to buy some Girl Scout cookies? And I did actually want some Girl Scout cookies. So I took her order form, and I had put my name on the order form and then the mother, she says, say thank you. And she looked at me. I think the little girl was the 3-year-old. She looked at me. She could barely talk, but she was like, no, I'm not saying thank you. No. And I was like waiting for the mother to like correct her or to say, oh, you know, that's rude or don't say that. And the little girl was so, I mean, she was just so nasty and just snatched her order form back. And I was like, well, you know, if you can't say thank you, then I'm not going to be able to buy any cookies. So I took the card, said, you can scratch my name off. And I was just watching it, how they didn't correct her. They didn't say anything. Yeah, this is how you treat black people. And so, interesting. And I was like, okay, my new code is never support little fundraisers from the white kids in the office, or period. So I wanted to share that.
Racist man, racist woman, racist child. Absolutely. I think that would go into helping white people, supporting their fundraisers and such on the job. I would have to have an excuse like, oh, man, we've got medical bills. I'm about to be anything. Like, yeah, I just don't have any spare change, something. My, you know, relatives are mooching off of me, and you know, I'm having to scrape together money just to, you know, get my lunch, get a peanut butter sandwich for lunch. I'm struggling. It would be something. No helping white people. Other folks we have not heard from at all. Did you have commentary you wanted to share? You should speak up now.
Yeah, speak.
Yes, sir.
Yes, greetings, Gus. Greetings to the rest of the callers. It's very helpful for me to listen to some other people going through similar things. I wanted to share a few things, observations, and a couple experiences from this week. I wanted to first start off by a website that I found that helps me working or in a work situation, might be helpful to some of the listeners, antipolygraph.org, I believe it is. Antipolygraph.org, it's a little ebook that kind of helps you defeat lie detector tests. And the information just talks about how they're not very accurate, and a lot of non-white people, including myself, have been subjected to polygraph tests for job purposes, for hiring purposes. I worked as a security guard once. But this kind of teaches you what you need to do. I found it instructive, some of the information. It's a big ebook, but antipolygraph.org, there's an ebook there that might be helpful to some of the listeners. This week, typical behavior, I have noticed something about the hardware store. I frequent different hardware stores and parts supply houses around the city, and I can understand, I think I finally understand what, I believe Dr. Cambon said, he ran into a white male who looked at him one time, and the look just kind of transmitted that he wants to kill him. And I believe another caller said body language is very important, but I receive that look quite often while I'm at supply houses. Interestingly enough, mostly white males, they would look at me. I don't lower my head when I walk past white men, white women, white children. I don't give them the space. I walk straight. I don't slouch. I clearly let them know that at this particular moment, I'm not going to see. And I get a lot of looks, particularly because I drive a truck, and they're wondering, you know, where's my handler, essentially? You know, where's my coworker? Where's my handler? But they just see one black person. Of course, you know, maybe his hair as well, but I don't give them impression. But I have been noticing the looks have increased, and they're pretty stark. I don't know what that means as far as the big picture. Besides, these people are obviously white supremacists, are practicing racism, even in their looks at people attempting to harm non-white people, specifically black in this instance. But that's something that I've noticed, the hostility, just from the look that people have given me. I did want to say for the young brothers in the, the brother who was in the hostile work environment on the boat, my sympathies as well. Being stuck on a boat with white people is terrifying for me. I'm in their homes, and it's extremely terrifying. Speaking of a hostile environment, and I think all non-white people should think about that when they're around white people, that at any moment in time, they could literally physically inflict harm, or of course, you know, they just love doing their tacky mental destructive. But I had a particular instance this past week. It was actually today. There's a client of mine who has me come and do work around his home. He works from home. He's a white male, what most people would describe as a hippie. He's probably 60 or so years old. He has very long hair. The place he lives in is a rag, has things, trinkets all over the place. I've been to work at his home before. I might have shared before. He scared me once with a fake snake skin in his basement. I believe he was trying to scare me with a big snake skin that was down there. And I, of course, was afraid because I thought there was a snake that was loose in the basement. But this time I went to do some work for him, finish up some plumbing. And I walked into the house, and the first thing I noticed was a pistol sitting next to his – he was sitting at the computer, and he was about 12 feet, maybe about 10 o'clock. There was a pistol sitting there right next to the computer desk. Now, you know, I'm going to assume, because with racist men, racist women, racist child, they're always practicing their trade, plying their trade. You know, why would he have a pistol near his hand when I walk in the door? Usually I'm aware if I have a pistol in here. I believe that I walked in, you know, real slow. I just, you know, did my thing. I didn't blink. I didn't flinch or anything. He later put a piece of paper over it. And it kind of reminded me again, you know, I'm in someone's house. I mean, this guy could literally run up on me any moment. It's quite sad that we have to think that way, but living under the system, you know, he of course acts very quote unquote cordial. This typical tacky behavior, nothing necessarily terroristic. He, you know, he attempts to be nice with me in some instances. I believe it's deceptive. But yeah, that was something that I noticed, that he did have that out, and there were several knives laying throughout the house. So I kept my guard up the whole time. You know, I'm thinking like, okay, if he runs up on me, I'll pull off to the side, and because you never know. That being said, again, this happened on Tuesday. I went to do some more plumbing work at a house, and I was alone with the client's son, young white male. He was at home. He was laying on the couch watching movies. He's without a job. I just want to say, as a side note, for all of the brothers and sisters who may be struggling and might not have employment at this moment, do not despair. There are also white people in the system who do not have employment, and they are really good at truly being lazy, not just not able to find work because of race, man, but they are truly lazy individuals. This was one of them. I would almost use the uncodified term, he ain't kind of person, but he was laying on the couch while I came into the house. And he had like a throw all the way up his body. Now, I'm not sure what his hands were doing, but I was suspicious of this cat from the very get-go. I believe a couple weeks ago I shared that he was very short with me when I walked in the house. He's probably in his late 20s. And you know, he has a child somewhere with some wench, and he you know, lives with his mom. I don't really care too much. But he was at home alone, and I was there with him. Of course, this is the trailer park community. So, you know, I know when I go out to my truck, everybody is looking at me wondering how did they let this nigger in the park and to camp. I do some work, but I never really understand. I really don't know where his hands are. To me, it looked like he was under the influence when he did speak to me of either some type of narcotic or possibly he was drunk. I don't know what his hands was doing. I don't want to think. At the same time, when I'm doing work in his mother's bedroom, which is an extremely dirty place, I was extremely appalled. I'm never shocked, but very appalled at the filthiness of whites. I see it often on a daily basis. And I was very aware, you know, where he was attempting to, in case he bum rushed me in the room, protect myself. I've gotten to the point, learning a little bit more about racism, being a little less confused, assuming these people are trying to do me harm. And my last instance would be a sharing of a brief story of what happened to me with a company doing business with in Florida, very similar to the other callers who've had my problems with money. I think that's very important that we continue to talk about how trifling racists are with non-white people's money and how they like to play games almost like a rabbit and a toy or a cat and a little toy. A payment of $1,000 over 2 months. I was called 3 times last week, calling them back and forth. You know, where's my money? I'm just not going to forget about $1,000. That's just not going to happen. And I can't do that, right? So they have this new lady in payroll. She sounds like she, you know, a white woman, possibly from part of the world known as Eastern Europe, maybe has a thick accent, and acting as if she doesn't know a lot. Again, white women feigning to be ignorant on any level to me is unacceptable. She acts as if she doesn't know what's happening. And over several phone calls, finally locates, okay, this is what happened. We're going to cut the check. She did not understand when I said I need a tracking number, tried to play that with me. I called back, spoke to another woman by the name of Kelly, assuming another white woman, saying they're going to make this payment. But in reality, there's almost nothing I could do except persistence. Of course, like Mr. Fuller said, we have to be persistent to get anything done. With persistence, well, I know that I'll get the money, but the trifling behavior that I have to go through, and at the same time, this company is calling me and asking me to do work for them here in Kansas City. You know, it's very sharecropping type of nature. Like, I would just exploit you, and I'll tell you I'll pay you, and I won't. So even for the people who are employed and have an employer and have that type of relationship, do not think being self-employed, you are exempt from the system, and all of a sudden you've gained some type of new freedom. You will have to deal with the same constraints because your skin color will not change, although your employment status may. I will take my call offline and maybe comment later. Thank you.
For sure. Very important. Always appreciate hearing from black entrepreneurs. We heard from Triumph 3000 a few weeks back. Black female who works for herself, and I definitely appreciate what she shared about, you know, if you have your own like side gig, as they call it, where you can work for yourself and make some income, even if you still do have a job where you're working directly for whites, that can give you, you know, a little bit of increased freedom where you are not solely dependent on that one stream of income when whites begin acting tacky and terroristic. But just as the last caller stated, do not think for a second that just because you are a black entrepreneur that you're not going to have to deal with racism, white supremacy, because that is not the case, and you will be in for a rude awakening at some point. I think if you're going to be going into race soldiers' houses, you definitely need to have a code, because you never know what you could find going into that trap. I mean, it could be a gun, alcohol, animal, naked white woman, all of the above. I mean, it just could be a variety of hazards. And I would encourage anyone where you know you're going to have to be going into the residence or apartment or whatever it is of some racist, man, I would have a huge code. Even their children, because I think people have mentioned that before, too, where they had to do work in a white person's residence and their children became a problem. So just develop. I mean, it would have to be a detailed, extensive code that is constantly being updated and refined, because that is, I mean, wow. Talk about behind enemy lines. Anybody we have not heard from at all going into our final hour. So please do not, you know, wait till the last absolute minute. If you have commentary, go ahead, get your hand up. Anyone who has a hand up on the line that we have not heard from at all, you should speak up right now.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Hello to you, Gus, and to the other callers and listeners. Just want to just give some observations. I think about a month ago, probably been about 3 or 4 Thursdays ago, your program dealt with a lot of temporary work. And I remember, I think somebody had wrote in and she talked about being in the company. And I think she took like credit and collections. They hired right off the street, and those departments were full of white people. And the department, I think she was in customer service, and you had to go through a temporary agency, you know, to get that job. And she just talked about the stuff that was going on. I think she said she ended up leaving the job. So I just want to give this observation. I was a tip worker, and really up until the 6th of this month, which is the first Friday of this month. And so I started off with this insurance company. And I started there 4 years ago. Well, wait a minute. Yeah, 5 years ago now. Well, 4 years, almost 5 years. And so when that first assignment was over with, it was around Christmas time, the new year came and they called me back. So I went and I worked in another department. And then I stayed with that department for quite some time, and then they moved me down to another department because that department that I was in previously, they were cutting back. It was the accounting department, and they went from something like 40 people to, I think, less, maybe about like anywhere between 10 and 15. And it was, you know, they had about five or six blacks up there, and I think just about all the blacks let go when they, you know, they went through just, you know, went through this. What are they doing? Because some of those jobs were going offshore. So they sent me to another department, and so it worked down there. And then in 2015, I think it was around the month of December, work was over with, so the job was over with. So in, I'm sorry, December 2014. So in January 2015, they called me back. So, you know, I was working there, and so that it was a year, almost 2 years to the day run, you know. So now I'm unemployed, you know, and I'm looking for something and what have you. And I will say this, I am a woman of a certain age. I'm not a younger woman, shall we say that. So today I was at a mini job fair, you know, just for work, and it was to help older people, you know. And so I was just thinking about this temp job that I was at. And in the course of working at this job, I applied for jobs, and they, you know, wouldn't get hired. I was in one department, and I was hired because I was there. When they train new people, you know how you come out on the floor, and then, like, if people have questions, you know, I could answer their questions and stuff. And so, and you know, I didn't think nothing about it. You know, just working my job. Hey, you got a question? You know, but, you know, you ask a question, I'll answer the question, help you figure it out, and, you know, we go on. And so then they created another department. They created a whole new department. Just about everybody that I worked with got hired into the company. And they threw up this assessment. So you had to take this assessment. So I took the assessment, and they told me I failed the assessment. So I told the friend of mine, I don't believe I failed the assessment. I think that, you know, when it comes to workplace, things that you can do, you know, I mean, you know, we know in this country, when it comes to these tests and things, blacks have a hard time with them because a lot of them are racially biased or what have you. But I could tell my friend, I just refuse to believe that I failed that assessment. And so yet, you know, they kept me on. So, you know, kept working. And then I applied for another job, took the assessment, and passed it. And so when it was come time to set up the interview, all of a sudden, I'm told that, oh, you took the assessment before and you failed it, so we can't go no further. And I says, no. I said, you have a period of time, like 6 months, you know, maybe to a year before you can take it. And that time it passed. And I says, no, I took the assessment and I passed it. And I made phone calls and wrote emails to find out what happened. No one ever said anything else to me about that job. So my observation, what I want to say is, especially to people, sometimes we go into companies as temps. There's nothing wrong with that, you know. But I guess what I'm saying, if you're deciding that, say, like, you want to work at that company. This was an insurance company. You know how insurance companies hire. Like, you decide maybe that you work at an insurance company. You're working there. You're doing good work. They're keeping you on. You leave, they bring you back. You leave, they bring you back, you know. And you decide that, hey, you know, I'd like to work at this company because, you know, you want to get the benefits, vacation day, sick day, you know, all the stuff that you would get working. What, you know, I'm saying that if you are applying for jobs at the company, and if you apply for like two or three jobs, you have to make the assessment on your own. But if they don't hire you, I'd be willing to tell you maybe it's time for you to move on. You know, that didn't hit me until today as I was at this other job fair, you know, as listening to people, and I was just thinking about my situation at this company, because I will tell you too, I applied, since I'm no longer with this company, I went on their website, and they had a couple of positions, and I applied for a position this past weekend, and by Monday, I had a notice in my email box that, you know, we're not going to proceed with your application, and, you know, and I'm just like, wow. And so I guess what I'm saying is, still, you know, tell especially young people that's working that day, sometimes you can get into a company temporary. I understand, and we know the games that are played. But I was just saying, I mean, if they're letting you go and calling you back and you say you would like to work for that company, and if you're applying for jobs and they're not hiring you, I would say you would probably need to talk to your agency and move on, because it hit me today that basically they strung me out like this. And now, you know, we don't need you no more and you're gone. So, you know, I come out of the company. I mean, you know, I'm no longer there through my temp agency or period. And I apply for a job on my own, and I have a record there. You know what I'm saying? And yet, you know, I get a note back in my email box that, you know, we're not going to proceed with your application. You know, so, and I mean, he kept calling me back. So, you know, I'm a good worker, didn't have problem with attendance, anything like that. So I'm just, you know, just wanted to give that to young people start out, because we can be dragged on. And like the young lady on the show, I guess about a month ago, who talked about, like she said, I think she was a customer service. You know, to come into that company, you have to come in through temps, whereas you're looking at another department and you're seeing, I said, white folks getting hired off the street. You're in there, you know the system, you know things about the company, but yet, you know, they're not hiring you out there, but people are coming in off the street, you know, fresh, uncut, nothing, and, you know, being hired, trained, and then given jobs. And I mean, when I was there, I see them come in and I see them leave, you know. And so I just wanted to share that, because I'm just saying, you know, unfortunately, I didn't know that. We don't have time to have people stringing us along. And then when they're finished, you cut the string and we're through with you, you know. So I just wanted to share that, and I'll mute myself.
I'm sorry to hear about that. That is, as you stated, very, very common with black people who use a temp agency to find employment, and are hoping maybe if I can start on a temporary basis and then be hired full time, and as you state, get all the benefits and everything that you get. I think Thomas in New York talked about that, where I think it was he personally was working through a temp agency for a previous employer, and he said that I think someone told him that they had a code about this, that if you worked there on a temporary basis, if it was beyond 90 days, I think it was something, either you got a promotion or you got a full-time contract, something. It was something where you got an upgrade if they kept you on longer than 90 days. And what they would do is just string you all the way out to the 89th day and they'd be like, oh, we don't need you anymore. And then they might bring you back. They would end that contract and bring you back, so then they could have another 90 days to use you and just do the same thing, that they had just worked a pattern. That way they have a whole labor force that they can underpay and not give them benefits and medical and sick leave and all that other stuff. And of course, disproportionately, this is going to be black people, dark people, that they way that they continue the same thing, like with the half has never been told in terms of sharecropping and mm-hmm. that sort of thing. Long history of not correct. And again, this is how you end up with black people who have a disdain for work. You would too. It would be human nature to have a disdain for work if this is how you're consistently treated for generations, regardless of what the work happens to be. Did we have other folks, anybody that we have not heard from at all? Your line should be open.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Yes, sir. Greetings to you, the host, the callers, and the listeners. I'll just call in to say, like, I've worked a lot of jobs, you know, just over the course of my life. And it's just really disappointing, because every job that I work, I have to, in some way, harm black people. And I don't mean like I try to harm any black person. I wouldn't do that intentionally, but every job that you can get, or every business, every industry within the system of racism, white supremacy, is going to support the system of racism, white supremacy. And the end product of racism, white supremacy, is black people dying. And the ultimate end product is the genocide of all black people. You know, and then, so I just say it to say, like, all the jobs, you know, everything I can do in some way, I have to harm black people. And I could like, okay, for instance, I've worked in a laboratory, in a physiology department of one of the universities, when I was young, like maybe 13 or 14, and I was studying
albino rats, and we were studying diabetes. We were trying to get a cure for type 1 diabetes, but type 1 diabetes occurs mainly in albino creatures because it's a defect. There's a whole lot of defects that comes with albinism. Well, anyway, so we're trying to find the cure, whatever we're doing, all the tests we're running. But, I mean, the cure seemed to be quit inbreeding the albinos. You know, then you'll just instead allow the creatures to remain melanated. Don't keep creating albinos. And then you solve a whole lot of diseases. Well, anyway, so like that job working at the laboratory, I was helping out that albino race, or if you want to call it that, or the ice albinos, or people who call themselves white. I was helping them out, you know, but I'm doing something that it seems like, you know, it's really interesting. The work I was doing. Another work I was doing is in real estate, but in real estate, I help people buy houses. I help black people buy houses. But then none of these properties are worth the value, in my strong opinion, or worth the cost. I mean, the houses in my city, they're all 100 years old. In the black area of town, a good portion of it has mold. It's all in the flood zone. It's all in the valley. It's not worth the dollar amount. And then just the way, if you actually like study how real estate works and how you can take one piece of property or so many acres of land, and then you can subdivide it. And then like the way they do the pricing, it's just so crazy. You'll never be able to catch up in this game. So I would be harming black people every time I help them get a house. I can't figure out how to do it without harming the people. I can't figure it out. I've played at many mega churches, black mega churches, and I had to stop. I would stop, and then I would go back because I get hungry, you know. But you know, I had to stop because, like, I'm really damaging my people, sending them to Jesus, or however, maybe that's a metaphor, how I said it. But you know, it's just damaging. Everything that you do with the system, it's going to help the system. Millie Fuller says that. Another person that the young people can look forward to study, Dr. Francis Wilson, of course, Dr. Kamal Kamban, who I've heard a number of people mention him tonight. He says that this is an international prison, he says it's an international plantation. Nellie Fuller says that this is a global prison or even a universal prison. But, I mean, until the system is ended, everything we do is going to help out the system. Everything we do is going to kill black people or help out killing black people. So I would just say, keep trying to solve this problem as soon as possible. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Yes, ma'am, the Radiant Emmy.
Thank you. Greetings, everybody. And so with the previous caller, I want to kind of just reiterate what he said about how all of us do maintain the system of racism, white supremacy, even just by going to work or by going to school. Like, none of us are completely outside of it. Like, even when we buy groceries or just buy things or use technology, like, you know, cell phones and laptops and so forth. And I mentioned, and I know, you know, he's not the first to say it, but I don't think sometimes it gets enough talk time because it's extremely important. And I say this to segue into a workplace racism situation that is not my own. So I was talking with a young gentleman, and he does like construction work. And I shared with him every time we had articles or news clips about the discrimination that these type of poor labor environments use. I'm not sure, like ready labor, I think that's the term. There it is. And, you know, how they'll choose Mexican workers or Latino workers, or pretty much say they don't want Black workers and so forth like that. And as a way to further illuminate and clarify racism and white supremacy, because it was something that he himself would talk about without having, you know, a whole lot of clarity around it. So I try to be well-versed enough in different things, like how racism looks to different people, so that I can be more effective in having the conversation about racism the way that we talk about it, to kind of bring them in. So I try this way. So he tells me this story, like he's been telling me this story about this older Black gentleman. He does something with a power drill and like drilling into the ground. So it's real hard and heavy work and stuff like that. And this older Black gentleman is not pulling his weight. So he's, you know, and I'm constantly saying, you know, it's, I understand the frustration, but it's not his fault. And perhaps the way that you're, because he's saying he's making this man his money. I disagree, but I could be totally incorrect, which I say every time. And so it blew up. And, you know, called me and was like, I think I got this man fired. And I was just like, I immediately went to the part in the code where Mr. Fuller talks about, don't do anything that is going to take gainful employment, and I'm paraphrasing, away from anyone, including whites. And about the white people, that's me, but especially when it comes to other non-white people, specifically Black people, he says, don't do that. And, you know, so I was like, man, this is bad. So now he goes into the story, because I knew it was working up to that, and I kept trying to prevent that from happening. But when we're so frustrated by our own condition, wherever we are, him being in this hard labor construction thing that's like temporary and he's unable to make certain moves or whatever, that frustration is going to come out at whoever non-white, specifically Black, is closest, who is just going to catch it. Like, I don't, you know, we must have, you know, systems in our brain that lead us to believe this person we should just be attacking for whatever reason, whether it's a personal friend or a coworker or whatever, but they're going to catch our hate and our frustration. So this older Black man is catching. So he says this whole story about how this white man who, this is like the overseer, and this word will come back up again. And then there's like an older Black man who, has been, who's like, who would be like the Black overseer underneath the white overseer. And then my friend and the older Black gentleman who's, they're supposed to be digging his hole. I think that's what they're doing. They're digging a hole. And he kept saying, you know, I'm making this man his money. I'm making this man his money. And da 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 da. So I went to the other dude and I told him how, you know what I'm saying, he just needed to get somebody, because I ain't trying to be working and making this man. So moving on. I tried very hard, and I failed, ultimately. I will get to the point. I failed. It was already done. Number one, I failed in preventing the situation from happening. Not that I have any control over someone else, but I was trying to illuminate how that is a system, how that is a function of the system of racism, white supremacy, to produce this type of conflict between non-white, specifically Black people, particularly in a work environment. But it didn't come across. And that maneuver, like I tried to say, this is the same as a plantation. Like if you could step back from it, you have your white overseer, then the Black overseer, who's not really an overseer, but, you know, just like he keeps the Black people in check. And you pretty much just snitched on, you know, this guy. And for what? It's not like you're going to get a raise. Like, and even if you did, was it worth it? That, because he was saying how he was making his money. I said, like, logic, that doesn't make sense. Like, if now you're the only person digging a hole, are they going to give you his money too? Otherwise, I could understand the argument. But anyway, so I'm just letting y'all know I failed, because it turned into like this whole thing. And I tried to avoid it because I'm getting tired. And I'm too young to get this tired. But of talking about it with people who I know are not receptive. And I just have to break. Like, there's nothing I can do, you know? I can't force people to see that which they don't want to see. And because he told me the story, and I said, interesting. Like, I'm so new to code. Like, I break it because I still can become emotional. And he was like, Emmy, tell me what you think. And I was just like, it's interesting. You told me a story. I'm asking you what you think. Or any other time you want to talk a whole lot, why, you know? And I was like, it's interesting. Like, you know, you did what you did. It's done. It's whatever. And he asked me again. I was like, all right, look, fine. You know what I'm saying? You're no different than anybody else. You see what I'm saying?
And I'm no different than anybody else. We are all sitting here maintaining the system of racism and white supremacy. But if you're not looking at it, then you don't understand it. So moving on from that, that was an epic fail. And that was today. So it drained my energy earlier. Let me see. I have the next thing I wanted to talk about was the albino thing. The person that spoke before me, just it's, you know, in school, white people. And this is like a total welding moment. Like, I wish I could just like chime in with y'all real quick and be like, yo, this is a total welding moment. And y'all could see it. Cause it's like in the textbooks, in the examples, like everything, they're always talking about albino things. And they happen to know how many albino whatever exist in the planet at whatever time. Like, I mean, I know that there's only 152 albino alligators right now on the face of the planet. And I know the white rhino is almost extinct. It's, wait a minute. Like, so many things to, you know, white people study everything, but they are really on this albino thing, which only goes to further prove what racism is, as we define it here on the show, and as Dr. Welsing has defined it as well, an extreme concern about preserving quote-unquote white at any means necessary, by any means necessary. Destroy everything if it means white, whatever it is, can live. So, but, you know, I've just been running across, and I giggle every time. No one knows why, but I giggle all the time. And then about these white women, so there's two. I did work as a concierge of the property management company in Washington, D.C. I left that job and I'm in school, but I still have to work and I'm contracted. So I wanted to move into the weekend situation, like overnight. I remember explaining this just a synopsis. So this should have been a very smooth, easy process, no big deal. Like, we have tons of weekend positions. All of a sudden, there are no weekend positions. And I shared with you all that the white woman who knows all of and controls all this information pretty much stole my job, which is how I ended up being a concierge for almost 2.5 years. Anyway, so, well, hold on. Let me rephrase. She didn't steal my job because it's not my job. But, you know, if you understand what I'm saying, I was supposed to be doing what she's doing, and because she's white, she got it, period. So anyway, she knows this, I know this, so it's whatever. And so I'm emailing because I do everything in email. You know, weekend position, da-da-da-da, we have the location, when can I go out there to do the little training, whoop-de-whoop, all this whole thing. I mean, time has gone by, and it's fascinating the level of professionalism that is that we are expected to exude in contrast to what white people are expected to do. Now, I don't know of any situation where you can write an email that doesn't get responded to 2 weeks later. And it's like, oh, well, I didn't get to talk to such and such. You respond to that email immediately. Like, that's standard. Well, I haven't been able to reach this person, but I will get in contact with you when I do. That's how you do that professionally. I think that's like a standard code in professionalism. Anyway, she doesn't do that. So I, again, with the persistence, I'm going to keep following up because I still have to do what I have to do. And my complete, like, there's without a doubt, I always expect to be mistreated by white people in every instance, whether it's them not holding the door, giving me nasty looks, messing with my money, trying to say that I missed points when I didn't, not offering me opportunities, like doing whatever they can do to try to make me feel less than human. I expect that from every white person. This white wench is not excluded. So anyway, so she calls me up finally now, and someone else has resigned from the location, so they definitely need people now. So, you know, here we go. And skip, 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 skip. And she's so pressed, you know, to have a title and be doing what she's doing. And she actually says, you know, because I oversee this property. I'm sharing this here because words are so important. And so I already know now what this will be. You see what I'm saying? She's already let me know she oversees this property. She's going to be super anal and try to be, like, on me to be doing or feel whatever. So I already know I'm still going to go because, you know, like Mr. Neely Fuller says, it doesn't matter where you go, it's going to be racism and white supremacy. I'm just grateful that I can see exactly who she is, how she practices her racism with her annoying voice and her tacky behavior and her overseeing demeanor that she's going to want to try to push on me. So I'll just be prepared, and I won't have to deal with her often, but when I do, I know exactly what it is. So I'm very well prepared. And
So that white woman doesn't know that I know and I'm looking at her. So we're not about to stress Emmy out about this. Moving on from that white woman to the white psychology professor, this is just because, you know, I think it's fascinating that we do spend a considerable amount of time putting white women in perspective and calling them out and speaking about them. Number one, this white woman is highly sexualized and like slightly perverted. It's not even slightly, it's perverted. Like she's constantly making sexual jokes and all that kind of stuff. And I think it's just tacky. But she said she made a joke about whether being breastfed was a gateway drug or the gateway entrance or the gateway to developing addictive behaviors. And she said that that is a possible theory, but you know, she made a tacky joke about it. Right now she looks at me, it's always in the front. I wear glasses or whatever. And I'm not laughing at all. Everyone else thinks this is funny, but I don't think it's funny at all. Because to me, in the context of racism, when we talk about drug abusers, we're talking about black people who white people have said need to be locked up. So then she stops and she's like, well, I don't want to make it like that. And then she tells the story about how opiate abuse is affecting her family. And then I read an article about there's like a poll that 77% of Virginians don't think that people who are abusing opiates need to be incarcerated, that they need to be rehabilitated. And I think it's just absolutely fascinating and so on time too, because opiate use is white people's thing, as far as unless I'm correct. I know some of us do it, but that's their thing. And now they're not terrible people that they're going to incarcerate in mass like they've done us. And yet so many of us are incarcerated off of that. So when it comes, that's a classroom. And so, you know, one thing I found to be effective is not participating in the like standard social behavior pattern. It's not funny. I'm not laughing. I'm not looking down. I'm looking in your face and I'm not like, you know what I'm saying? Participating in this foolishness. And so that way, when you're around me, you will behave properly. And it's also just a way for me to, at least, I mean, you won't behave properly, but I can tell that there's a difference. And so it's one way that I can measure whether or not I'm showing up as someone who's slightly more codified and less confused about racism than before. So it's really just social experiments. I don't care about this woman. She doesn't care about me, but, you know, I can set a certain tone perhaps. And that is what I have for this week. So thank you all for listening.
Indeed. I had two reports that people wrote in. I wanted to make sure I share so that we get all those. And then the remaining time, we'll make sure to get anybody else who's dialed in with a hand up. The first report. I previously wrote in about my experiences at the insurance company that I work for. And unfortunately, I'm still here. As a victim that is aware, it's hard to ever be sane here. I'm constantly realizing all the terrorism I face here as a black woman from these creatures. I'm just a claims representative, and we only have two representatives, one white guy than me. What I've noticed is that my white female boss has an obsession with trying to give me orders. I understand there are rules I need to know to follow, which I do, but she goes overboard trying to give me orders that actually go against the rules. When I don't follow these orders, I get written up for not listening. She never gives these stupid orders to my white male coworker. She also expects me to complete my files the way she wants when I don't have to. For instance, she wants me to fill out every inch of the claim folder for her. She wants me to fill out every inch of the claim folder to her, like when my white male coworker hands the files to the adjusters completely blank. They only care about the paperwork. Now, when I hand in my folder, she reviews it and then tries to reprimand me for skipping a question that is optional. Concerning the folders, I get folders to work on from all adjusters, while my coworker only gets folders from one adjuster. My workload is triple his, as I get at least 50 folders to work on at the start of my shift and throughout the day. The folders don't stop coming in. Anyhow, I generally finish my folders by the end of the work shift, and my manager has the nerve to question me about it. Yesterday, she was surprised I was able to do so much work. Her actual words. She then goes ahead and tells me she needs to review them for mistakes, which is completely unnecessary. My company has two locations, and the other location is very white. Well, they have managed to track me down and blame me for stuff that's impossible for me to do. I never interacted with these people, never talked to them. Our paths never cross. I have seen them once, and that was at the company party I attended 2 weeks after I got hired. I just find it interesting that they managed to blame me for things they couldn't complete, although I never interact with these people, and my manager actually believes them. I know you mentioned that white people treat black people like children, and I think the reason for this is that they are trying to maintain control and are scared if you grow up and learn the truth. I'm being treated like a child here. Now, I speak the black male supervisor higher than her about this, and he just makes jokes. I mean, that's all he does. My orders. My white female boss seems to have a problem with the fact that I don't listen to her stupid orders. One thing I notice, I'm not sure if other black corporate workers notice this, but when I take paid time off or a day off, my white male coworker will take his days off prior to mine, and when I come back, it seems that he takes it personally when I take PTO. He will look on the human resource calendar to see when I'm taking off, then request, for instance, the 2 days before I'm scheduled to leave or the 2 days after. I know this is a lot, but terrorism is constant. Last thing, non-white people and white people have a major problem with black males and black females who aren't tokens. Now, I am going to point this out because people have berated me when I have used the term black female, never for using the term black male, only for black female. It has happened live on this program. It's happened in my writing. This person wrote black male and black women. If I did that and it was reversed, black men and black female, oh man. Anyway, going back to what they wrote, black males and black women who aren't tokens. I need to read that whole sentence. Last thing, the non-black, non-white people and white people have a major problem with black males and black women who aren't tokens. They will find a willing... Yeah, I don't do the name calling. I can't even finish this because, yeah, I don't do name calling on the program. It had to be a different term to describe what you're talking about because I just do not do name calling. I have concluded that is one thing that would help a lot in minimizing anti-blackness and conflict with other black people, not name calling black people for any reason. That would be maximum demonstration of black self-respect. Last report. This is a black male. I'm an African-American male who works for a large bank and have recently encountered bias and racism on the job. On my job, I have noticed management, which is compromised of a white male supervisor, a white female, his friend and assistant, and a black female, a manager who praises the white male with every turn trying to climb the plantation ladder. Trying to slowly purge of African males from our particular group, which services high net worth individuals. One African American male, left because he heard word of his possible firing, and three others were fired due to performance issues. I am unfortunately their next target, mainly targeted by the white male who tries to play it off like he is this Mr. Nice Guy and down with black people, but I have noticed a strange phenomena that consists of him only communicating and trying to build rapport with black females, other white men, and international employees, but never black males, who he always seems to have a problem with, evidenced by his firing of black males who have all been regarded by others as good, reliable workers. As of late, he has sent his henchmen, the white female and black female, to do his dirty work to try to annoy me with little things such as aggressive micromanaging, sounds like the last person who wrote in, harassing emails about productivity, small mistakes in productivity reporting metrics to make me look bad, and most recently a bad end of the year review, which is plastered with lies to make it look like I cannot do my job. To make it even worse, I have heard him on several occasions talking negatively about an acne condition I have to this black female. Most recently, I have brought my complaints to HR, who at first did not take it seriously until I mentioned that I am friends with one of the business partners that we service. Now they are performing an investigation. My question is, have you, Gus, or anyone else noticed this type of behavior on a job they have had in the past or even now? And what did you do to survive this type of work environment? I would say, number one, if it's the small gripes, I guess it depends on what you're talking about. If it's the firing, I guess that would, if we're going in priorities, if it's the firing, Mr. Fuller has said previously, that is the system of white supremacy. If they want to fire you, any of us, if they want to fire us, they'll just do it. There's nothing you can do to stop them. So, keeping that in mind, I would just try to make sure that you do not make it easy for them to terminate you and getting things done, being on time, just little things that you can control. And it's been my experience on many jobs. They at least will tell you, even if they don't stick to it, but they at least will say that you should get notification if you're going to be terminated, if there are issues with your performance. You can check in about that. Are there any things that I can improve on, anything that, you know, I should be aware of to make sure that, hey, I'm in line and contributing to the best of my ability to what we're doing here at our illustrious organization. You could just ask that sort of thing. But if you know you're coming in on time and you're doing good work and they're just, you know, trying to nitpick to find something, I would take care of my mental health. I would keep my resume updated to see if there are better options available, even though you're still going to be going to work with racists. I would prepare for this sort of terrorist behavior. And what I mean by that is really just getting that in mind. I think what Mr. Fuller said in the audio at the beginning of the program today, where he said, we should not, any of us, we should not be in the mindset of I'm on this job and I'm making a lot of money or I'm doing well. And, you know, this is great. I'm going to have a long, lofty career. Or I'm a success. I made it. I'm somebody. No. System of white supremacy. We're still niggers. Learn as much as you can, make as much money as you can, try to keep that job as long as you can. But, you know, just have that in mind that, you know, hey, I already understand the environment that I'm in. They can use other victims of racism to harass and, you know, talk down to me or do whatever it is that racists want done on the plantation. But just understanding that that's the environment that you are in, managing your emotions and asking questions. If it's them coming to you with your year-end review, I have questions about this. You know, I would like a review and just have questions that you want to ask if they have a problem with something that you're doing or suggesting that you, what you're doing is not in compliance with policy. Thinking of questions, I'd review that policy and procedure manual as well. These are just some of the things that can help you on the job. I would recommend not referring to anything that is happening to you as a quote unquote complaint. I think that's very common. I would report it. Either this is a problem or this could be a violation. I would use different language to suggest. I would not use language that suggests that this is a complaint or a gripe. I think consistently they will take that sort of language as this is not something that's serious. This is not, you know, important business that we need to address. This is just a little child's tantrum or what have you. And oh, your feelings, that's kind of the way that they deal with those issues. So just to try to undercut that with our own use of words. We'll check in other folks that we have not heard from, and then if folks have commentary. But I think the other question, the second person that wrote in said, does this sound familiar? Other people going through this? I think the obvious question just from today's program would be absolutely. Any people we have not heard from at all have commentary?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, 2812 in Virginia. Mortgage banker. Give a quick update on a couple of things. I was teaching a class on renovation loans today. Had about it was a good class, about 15 people. But typically, so I don't get lost, I try to get to everywhere I have to go an hour early, just in case, you know, you have any technical difficulties and getting everything set up. And so I go up the elevator and I walk in, and there's a white male, probably 25, 26, might have been 30, but a young white male. And I walk up the steps and I just say, I get off the elevator and I say, good morning. I'm here to, I said, I'm Aaron. And I was about to say my name, but I'm such and such. And I'm here to teach the class. And he looked at me and said, you're teaching the class? And I just stared at him and I said, yes. Go ahead and check the paper. It says that. And he was like, oh, what class are you teaching? And I told him the name of the class. And he was like, oh, okay, well, it's good to meet you. And he was like, yeah, you just go in here. And he just walked away. And it was just so tacky, almost like, oh, I didn't know black people teach classes on real estate. Maybe I need to peek my head in and kind of see what this Negro is going to be talking about. So it was just really, really tacky. My class had about 15 people in it, and it was a good class. There were about 5 or 6 black people there. They got a lot of constructive information. Sometimes during the class, I can even get a little, try to throw in some things specifically to where I can talk about things like people being moved or gentrification in a very codified way. One lady at the end of the class, and I'm learning to be careful specifically because what I'm knowing is that even when I'm teaching classes or like around my kids or at their sporting events or just in general in this area of Virginia that I'm in, there are a lot of black people that have white partners. And what I'm noticing is it changes the whole tone of the conversation. I try to do as much as possible to try to help people, but sometimes I have to almost investigate a little bit because you don't want to cause any more problems. But with this young lady, she was really, we had a great conversation, and actually I've been listening to the old broadcast for the Warmth of the Other Suns when I'm at work. That's literally all I do because I have a lot of time to myself in my office. And she was from Chicago, and I had just mentioned a couple things about how I was enjoying the book. And she said, oh, yeah, I have to pick up that book and maybe listen to that broadcast. So that was good. And then the other thing that I want to mention, and I'll be a little transparent because I believe that is really helpful, is that specifically as black males, last year I was doing my taxes. I finished my taxes, and I tripled my income over the last couple of years. I had a good year. It was my best year financially ever with my time being on this earth. But that came at the expense of a long time, or well, it's been 3-4 years, of a lot of non-constructive behavior to where the other caller was talking about doing things to harm black people at the job. What I've been realizing, listening to the cows and reading, listening to Dr. Welsing and Mr. Fuller, is that how literally a lot of black males that I know growing up in New York City and just in a lot of different urban areas, basically we are trained to harm other non-white people in everything that we do. Whether or not, if you're making money, you're going to go make this money and go harm somebody else through your actions, how you conduct yourself, through your behavior. And none of it is constructive to stop to solve the problem. And about maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I had a real tough time, went through a breakup, divorce, things of that nature. And it was all just based upon non-constructive activity and behavior on my part. And it seems like my change that happened with myself specifically was becoming less confused about racism. Like it was immediate. And now when I make a little extra money or do anything, I'm trying to figure out different ways on how to help black people. And then the other thing that I'm proud of is that, you know, I had a previous relationship, and I was having a conversation with a young lady, and we were just kind of just discussing it. And this is the young lady I'm no longer involved with, but she's mentioned 2 things about being stressed at her job. And also she said, it was funny because she was like, yeah, well, if I know white people, they're having meetings, and they're having meetings and they're not good. And then I said, oh, I don't know if she called in tonight. And after I hung up the phone, I texted her and I said, hey, you might want to listen to this broadcast. And I texted her the broadcast about the books. Can't remember the lady's name, about workplace racism. And Gus was helping her be a little bit unconfused. And then I also texted a copy of the broadcast. And I don't know whether or not the young lady listened to them or not. I'm going to follow up. But she said, thank you. And years ago, I would have been squabbling with another black person because I thought that we're supposed to be enemies where, you know, all of our behaviors and everything we do is just simply based upon this tacky system that we have, and we're all being terrorized daily. And that's all I've got, and I'm in my mind.
Right on again, black self-respect, trying to help out other black people. That Area 8, that is interesting how the race soldier being in some sort of sexual arrangement with a non-white person, how that impacts the conversation. But yeah, we'll see if we have time to get more details on that before we wrap up. Anybody that we have missed totally, anyone that we haven't heard from at all, you should speak now.
Oh, good evening, Gus.
Okay. Good evening.
And everybody. Hey, I wanted to share something that happened today. It's not related to workplace, more like school / daycare. So my son just started going to this this pre-K school. I haven't had inside any type of facility because I hadn't really been trying to just have him at home and homeschool him, but, you know, due to, you know, circumstances, I had to find something. So I looked, and I looked high and low, and I found a facility that was run by non-white people. The director is a non-white woman. The teachers, the whole faculty, they're non-white. His class that he's in, it's about maybe 15 children, and they're all non-white, except for one white child. Yeah, one white child. And so when he first started, I had requested to have copies of the curriculum every week so that I can follow what's going on inside the classroom and what books are being read and what type of activities that they're doing. On the first week when I got the curriculum, I saw that the books that they were reading were mostly, well, majority, all of the books really were of white characters, mostly white little girls and a couple of animal tales and maybe one Hispanic tale or something like that. So I didn't say anything the first week to that woman. I needed more proof. And so I waited the second week. And the second week, yes, it was the same thing. It was overwhelmingly white characters. And so this week, when I got the curriculum again, I said that I'm not going to ignore it. I'm going to address it. So when I went to the school, I asked his teachers who decides what books that they're going to read to the children. Because they read to the children like maybe six times a day. And I asked her who reads to, who chooses the books. She told me that that they do sometimes. And so I let her know, well, I basically was like, well, these books are about white children about white characters. And I said, that's kind of strange to me, knowing that this whole classroom is full of non-white kids. Why aren't there any books that's representing them? And so she kind of just looked at me dumb, like, wow, you know? And so she said, well, maybe you want to talk to the woman that's making the curriculum. And the woman that makes the curriculum is a white woman. She's the only white woman in the whole facility. And so I was a little, I was ready to talk to her. So I went in there with her and one of my son's teachers, and I just laid it out. I said, these are the books right here for this week, and I let her know about the books from last week so that she would know that I have been following, and this isn't the first week, but this is the third week. And so she agreed, she said, yes, this is an issue. It was not done deliberately. And when she said that, I said, I told her I could understand why you may say that this wasn't done deliberately, but I suspect that it was done deliberately, because if it's not the first week, this isn't the second week, but this is the third week, and I suspect that these other classes are mirroring what's being done inside my son's class. And I don't understand how, when the class is like 98% non-white children, all of the characters in the book are white. And so then she was just basically stating that how that they're multicultural. And when she said multicultural, I just had to stop her. I said, can you explain to me what do you mean when you say multicultural? You know, so she looks at me kind of like, what do you mean, explain to you? I said, I need to know what it is that you mean when you say multicultural. She said, well, you know, the books in the classrooms, they're multicultural, like, you know, white, and she said African-American and Hispanic. I said, well, there are some books in the classroom like that, but in this curriculum, the books that are being read by the teachers are of white characters. And so anyway, so the non-white teacher that was in there with me, she was kind of like shaking her head and agreeing and stuff like that. And then the white woman asked the non-white teacher what was her opinion and stuff like that. And she said that the non-white teacher said that she thought that I was going too deep in it, and it really wasn't that deep or something like that. And it's really interesting, because this white woman understood that, yeah, okay, I see that this is an issue. But the non-white woman was like, yeah, well, it's not really that deep, and you know, there are other books in the classroom and stuff like that. And you can come in the classroom and look at the bookshelf. I told her, I said, that's something that I'm definitely going to do. But I suspect that when I get into that classroom, that there is, it's probably the ratio of the non-white books compared to the white books is going to be overwhelmingly unbalanced, and that's what it was. It's like I went in there, I looked at the bookshelf, and they were like, and I'm gay, but they were like maybe seven non-white books representing the children, and then they were like 10. Okay, like that's just the ratio that I'm saying and how it was played out to be. And I said, well, this is still an issue, you know? So as I left the classroom, I went back in the office, and I was speaking to a lady by myself. and then the director, who is over the facility, she is a non-white woman. She came in and she sat down, and I explained to her again what the issue was, and that I wasn't happy. And they said that if I can write up a list of books that I would like to see on the curriculum, that they will try to do something, that they will incorporate into the curriculum.
I want to just stop in right here because we only have about 6 minutes left, and I want to try to make sure we didn't miss anyone completely so that they at least have a few minutes to share. But I am so grateful that you shared that. I just wanted to say quickly, number one, the workplace racism, to have the victim of racism present. And I thought it was the white woman. You don't even have that many white people apparently in this school, students or faculty, but the white woman, who the person who makes the curriculum, is white. That is significant. But mm-hmm. then have this non-white person present, who presumably has less power since they don't make the curriculum, to have them present, that's workplace racism right there. Because most of us, the vast majority of victims of racism, particularly black people, they are not a white person that's more powerful than them on a job. They are not particularly something that is a racial issue. They are not going to sit and be like, oh, yeah, I think they deliberately put a racist there. I'm trying to keep the job that I have. And I don't see a problem at all. I think, and Mr. Fuller talked about that at the beginning of the audio we played today as well. That's what you should expect in the workplace. That's logical based on centuries of terrorism. The problem, our focus should remain the racist woman in this case, or whomever the suspected white person or suspected racist is in the situation. Sounds like you did a phenomenal job just asking questions. I did want to say, though, in my view, I don't know how this was resolved. It is not correct for the school to go to the parent and say, if you compile a list of books, like, whoa, I'm not supposed to be getting a homework assignment. You all went and got a lot of education and schooling. That should be a part of your training. And if you don't have it, then you should do homework to find books that need to go on this curriculum that reflect the student body that you have that is overwhelmingly melanin rich. Did we miss anybody? Anybody that's on the line that we haven't heard from? Oh, if we got everybody.
Hello, can I be heard?
Yes, sir, Mr. Steele.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. Okay, real quick before we conclude this broadcast, just wanted to say that I was listening to a conversation that a supervisor of mine was having recently, and he revealed that his ideal job would be coaching basketball. And he revealed that he had a history of coaching middle school basketball and freshman level basketball as well. And this kind of, I was just thinking about this, and it kind of goes into the image that I noticed last week of Bad Santa and Black Pete. I just keep on getting these snippets of him, revealing that I think he just likes to lord over black people. And that's kind of how I feel like I'm being managed. And I'm in this really, it's kind of simulated relaxed environment or simulated cool, because it's still the workplace, but they, I don't know if any of you guys can relate, but I'm in a workplace where everybody kind of dresses like they're going to the club. So it's not this environment that's conducive to hard micromanaging and hard management. But despite this, I feel as though I'm being treated this way, or at least as much as he can. And that's just something that I noticed. He just revealed that, yeah, his ideal job would be a basketball coach. And I just think that he just has a real penchant and coaching little kids. So I just think he has a penchant for being in charge of black people that are smaller than him or less powerful than him. So that's just something that I've noticed. One thing they have done to improve my quality of work and the amount of work that I'm able to do, and this is something that, you know, perhaps some other victims can take this suggestion and apply to their work, but I basically outsource some of the more basic tasks that I have to do at my place of work. I basically paid some Indian guys to do some menial data entry tasks that I constantly have to keep up with. So I'm just starting to utilize some of these some of this talent that's available, but I was told about this by some associates of mine that are suspected white supremacists. They basically told me, yeah, you can get a lot of work done in India for really cheap. And this person that I'm using is only charging me $3 an hour to do some very, very tedious data entry. So I'll be reporting on how this is working out for me. But if anybody else wants to try, I believe one website where you can find these people is freelancer.com. And then there's, I believe, fiverr.com. And then there is a website called Your Man in India. So basically there are some victims of racism that will definitely do, work for very cheap. And if you are able to, utilize this, I think that can bring some relief, of your time on the plantation, and it can also increase your productivity, at work as well.
Right. We will pause there. We did our 3 hours. I think we still might have missed a person or two, but, I think we got almost everyone. If we missed anyone, my apologies. We will do better for next week. Good to hear more folks, even some new callers that we got to this week. We will be here tomorrow, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. The Delectable Negro, Vincent Woodard, phenomenal text. Looking forward to it. Thanks to Dr. Curry. Normal time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. And as every Saturday, compensatory call-in will be here 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Pacific. Tune in. In fact, if we missed out on your workplace racism today, feel free. We can always make time for workplace racism this coming Saturday. If you have questions, problems, couldn't find something in the archives, you have a guest suggestion, feel free to drop us an email, untiljustice@gmail.com, untiljustice@gmail.com. Again, Cows, we are now at SoundCloud, so this episode will be on SoundCloud as well for people to access the archives. And if folks, if you have free time, are bored, we can add you to the team to help get content, our archives, uploaded to SoundCloud as soon as possible. So that'll be another venue where people can access the content, and we might even do some of the live streaming there as well, just to give people another outlet to be able to access the context of white supremacy. That's it. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in. I hope it was a constructive investment of your Thursday evening. Again, I suggest sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. I think the evidence thus far clearly shows that being under the influence of alcohol, tobacco, cannabis, any other narcotics that race soldiers crank out, that has not helped us solve this problem. And I would submit overwhelmingly the evidence seems to show unequivocally a lot of times us being under the influence, that has led to a lot of problems and enabled racists to continue dominating, terrorizing black people. Sobriety would be best. I think Dr. Welsing, she would want our brain computers operating at maximum efficiency. And I don't think too many of us, if any, can say, oh yeah, I do my best thinking when I'm inebriated. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people. victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Context of White Supremacy signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim, brother.
No problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my condition. Mm-hmm. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.